using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Wednesday, the 15th of September, year of our Lord 2021, day 550. 550 days of the New World Orders. Today we're going to have in the third hour a refugee from Australia, a freedom refugee who has happened to make it to the U.S. We're going to talk to her about what she saw, about the trip, how she got out, and what she's seeing here in America, and why she came to America. But we're going to begin today, after the headline news, we're going to start talking about the resistance, and it is starting to mount, and we've already had one victory in the courts. It's not, it's just the beginning, and there's more to come. And we're also going to talk about some Christian leaders who are pushing back on this. One individual in particular. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Well, we all know that this is part of a new world order. It's part of the Great Reset. It's part of the agenda that's been around for a long time that was sold for the longest time under climate change. And, of course, that is coming back. We've had the New York legislature, both houses in New York, and this new governor who took Cuomo's place, Governor Kathy, is it Hochul? I don't know. I haven't even looked up how to say her name, but she signed this bill. What this is going to do is ban the sale of gas vehicles by 2035. They're going to bring that down to 2030. We've seen this type of thing happening all across Europe. Now it's beginning in the U.S. It'll soon be followed by California, and it'll start happening everywhere. The next thing they will do is put limitations on fuel to try to shut down that avenue of transportation. This is a global agenda. This is tied together with the pandemic, climate and pandemic, two justifications to do the same thing. And again, it doesn't matter whether they are telling you that it's going to be a new ice age or whether it's going to be global warming, you still do the same thing. It doesn't matter whether it's going to be global warming, an ice age, or a pandemic, you still do the same thing. And so now they're moving to bring this back. And as I pointed out a couple of weeks ago, we had a couple of medical associations come together and start writing articles that you're seeing in a lot of the so-called science press. It's just politics, folks. This is not science. And they are calling for reorganization of society, these doctors, these medical organizations, just as you had a year and a half ago, at the very beginning of this, you had the New England Journal of Medicine saying that we have to figure out how we're going to force people to take these vaccines, and we're going to do it is through corporate coercion. But Biden has gotten a little bit power-hungry with this, and the corporate coercion aspect is a little bit too obvious for many people. So there's a lot of pushback. We're going to talk about some of the moves that are being made coming up. But getting back to this, it passed, as I said, in both the New York State Assembly and the State Senate. All passenger vehicles, including trucks and cars, will be required to produce zero emissions by 2035. The new governor said New York is implementing the nation's most aggressive plan to reduce greenhouse gas emissions affecting our climate and to reach our ambitious goals. Just as we're seeing with the COVID pandemic, and these other measures, they come up with a solution, quote-unquote, to a problem that they have not even documented the problem. There's no data for the problem. And after they have this so-called solution, nothing else can be allowed. You can't make your cars any cleaner. No, you know, it doesn't matter if you have a zero-emission internal combustion engine. You will just not have that. Everybody will go to this new thing. They're going to pull this same thing on us with meat, for example. It doesn't matter how the meat is grown, and you're seeing the preliminary steps of this right now. There are bills that are circulating in a lot of liberal states, like Colorado, for example, where they are trying to ban the production of pork. It's also, you know, California is doing this. We're doing it in the name of humane treatment of animals, but they're just going to flat out ban it for other reasons. It's just a preliminary step. And then they'll tell you what you can and cannot eat, just like they'll tell you what you can and cannot drive, what you can and cannot put into your car, what you must drive, what you must put into your body. No choice allowed about anything. So they said, again, they have a problem. A problem, they say, is greenhouse gas. Well, as we've seen CO2 go up, the temperature has not gone up along with it, as they predicted. But don't worry about that. It doesn't matter. It's just like the vaccines, just as they said, well, it's going to stop transmission. And when it doesn't, when they admit that the viral load is at least as bad with the vaccinated people as it is with the unvaccinated people, pay no attention. Just plod on continually down this path of warp speed. So the governor continued, said, the new law and the regulation mark a critical milestone in our efforts and will further advance the transition to clean electric vehicles. As I pointed out yesterday, you have MasterCard joining forces with the United Nations to produce a personal carbon allowance. And interestingly enough, it's not just that MasterCard and the banks and the United Nations are coming together to say, we're going to track everything that you buy. We're going to add a so-called climate credit to it. Oh, so that's completely different than social credits that we had in China, isn't it? No, it's not. Same thing. But instead of a social credit, we'll have a climate credit. And we'll look at the so-called carbon aspects of everything that you purchase. And once you get to your limit, we'll just turn this off. And so you look at it and you say, well, I think maybe I just won't use MasterCard. It's not just MasterCard. They're just getting in on the ground floor. It will be everyone. And they're going to roll this out through the central bank's new digital cash system. That's the plan. The plan to control what you can buy, when you can buy it, where you can buy it, who you can buy it from, to make sure that your money expires after a certain date so that you can't save anything or create any wealth. And the most important thing is that nothing is private. Everything is monitored by them. When we look at how this particular aspect of this is coming together with multiple facets. One of those facets are the 80,000 IRS agents and the $80 billion that is being used so that they can monitor, report, and record each and every transaction everywhere. All they have to do at that point, they say it's for taxes, but at that point, all they have to do is just apply the presumed carbon footprint to everything. And again, this dovetails with everything that they say they had to do for the pandemic. We have to have contact tracing. We have to have vaccine mandates. And that means that we have to know if you've really been vaccinated. So we've got to have vaccine passports and on and on and on. It was always the design from the beginning. They're not reacting to anything. Instead of reacting to a real emergency, they're plodding on regardless of what happens in the real world and what their products do, their vaccines. So in a recent editorial by the Journal of Medical Ethics, and I reported this a week ago, many governments met the threat of COVID-19 pandemic with unprecedented funding, and the environmental crisis demands a similar emergency response. This is coming from doctors and medical ethicists. It's coming from the health dictators. They said, governments must make a fundamental change to how our societies and our economies are organized and how we live, say the medical dictators. The medical dictators say governments must intervene to support the redesign of transport systems. That's, you know, banning all cars that are not made by the people who are designing the new types of cars that they all want you to trash your old cars and buy the new cars from them. So we have to redesign transport systems. We have to redesign cities. We have to redesign production and distribution of food. We have to redesign markets for financial investments. And then they finally get down to redesigning health systems. These are doctors. You would think that would be the first thing they would have there. That's not really their concern. The real concern is power. The real concern is the great reset, the great redesign, if you will, of all society by governments into a kind of corporate fascism that is organized and justified by medical dictatorship. An advocacy article in the prestigious Science Journal of Nature by four environmental experts, quote-unquote, lays out one such very disturbing proposal, a means of restricting individual behavior known as personal carbon allowances, PCAs, they call it. They've even got an acronym for it already, a PCA. They've been doing this for so long. And so, as I reported yesterday, the MasterCard United Nations collaboration, the world government and multinational corporations coming together to give you a PCA scheme. It would be a national mandatory policy. It's not going to be national. It's going to be international. But they say it would be a national mandatory policy. How many national mandatory policies are we going to have? And, of course, it all began with Obamacare. And it should really concern you, the fact that without any justification, and with all of the legal sleight of hands that were done by the Supreme Court, especially John Roberts at the Supreme Court, it's a tax. So you can't do it, but you can do it because it's a tax. You remove the tax, but we're still going to keep it in here because we're going to say it's not severable and all these legal games that they played to impose that on you. It should get you very concerned about any of these national mandates that are coming along. But a national mandatory policy that would entail all adults receiving an equal tradable carbon allowance that reduces over time in line with national carbon targets. This article in Zero Hedge says, imagine this, think about this, as World War II style rationing coupons. That's exactly what this is. And, of course, we have Amazon now in terms of contact tracing and all the rest of this stuff. They're rolling out their palm reader. Yeah, these people, Amazon, the pharmakia, the sorcerers, the palm readers now. I can see from your lifeline that it's going to be very short if we get these powers that we want. this palm reader that they've been putting out in their company-owned stores, particularly Whole Foods, they've now rolled out to somebody else for the first time. And Gizmodo just loves this. It's a sneak peek of our biometric-based future. Oh, boy, new technology. It doesn't matter what the implications of this are. They're just absolutely, totally fascinated with the fact that somebody can do it. And again, as we were talking about the Jurassic Park type resurrection of the woolly mammoth, the whole point of Michael Crichton was just because you can do something doesn't mean that you should do it, and you should consider the consequences of what you are doing. And again, that was absolutely amazing, the idea that they are presenting their resurrection of the woolly mammoth as something that was going to save us from global warming. And it was going to be done because the woolly mammoth was going to trample vegetation that was growing on the Antarctic. Except the problem is that if you got a gigantic herd that's going to have that much of an impact, why is it that you don't have to worry about the methane gas coming out of woolly mammoths, but you have to worry about the methane gas coming out of the animals that we raise for food? Oh, no, we're not going to pay attention to that. And it's now a bad thing to have plants that will take the carbon dioxide and methane and produce oxygen out of it. So nothing about that makes any sense. Nothing about this makes sense unless you understand what the agenda is. You can look at this and you can just shake your head and go, boy, this is crazy. This is kind of like those crazy nuts on social media or the crazy nuts in Congress or the crazy nuts running our schools. None of this stuff makes any sense. Oh, it makes perfectly good sense if you understand what they are trying to create and what they're trying to take down. It is a very well thought out plan. It's not a bunch of random collections of lunatic actions that are being done out there. They know exactly what they're doing. When a ticket holder is ready to enter the amphitheater, the Red Rocks Amphitheater in Colorado, they will just use their palm. We've already got their biometrics recorded. And Amazon said, we're excited to see how AXS, that's that amphitheater, fans like using the Amazon One to effortlessly enter their favorite events so they can spend less time waiting in line and more time enjoying their event. And, of course, you can hook that biometric palm thing in there with your vaccine status, with your carbon credits and all the rest of the things, the arbitrary metrics that they have imposed upon you in order to save the planet. And you're just going to have to sacrifice everything that you have to save the planet and the public health and everything else that they throw at you. A prosecution witness in Netanyahu's corruption trial is killed as his plane crashes in Greece. Now, this is a two-person plane. He was flying it along with his wife. It happened off of a Greek island. And he happened to be one of the witnesses in the ongoing corruption trial of Benjamin Netanyahu, the guy who, amongst other things, sold out the state of Israel to Pfizer as lab rats. Now, this is corruption that predates that betrayal. But you can look at this and say, oh, you know, planes crash all the time, especially small planes, and maybe that's all that was. The interesting thing about this is that multiple explosions were reportedly heard. A nearby local fisherman said there was a big explosion, followed by a smaller one. That is suspicious, but I'm sure it's just a coincidence, don't you think? Yeah, you know, we had a coincidental death of Ron Brown, a guy who had a lot of dirt on the Clintons years and years ago. Here's a flashback from 1999. Reed Irvine and Cliff Kincaid at AIM.org. Ron Brown's death is still a mystery. When the Air Force plane carrying Secretary of Commerce Ron Brown crashed in Croatia in April of 1996, rumors immediately circulated that the beacon that was supposed to guide the plane to the airport had been set to guide the plane into the mountain nearby. This was allegedly done by an employee at the airport who was found shot to death 3 days later as a suicide. It was declared a suicide. When it became known that the beacon at the airport had a fixed setting that could not be changed, the story changed. It was said that a portable beacon had been set up on the mountain to lure the plane off course. At the time, we were skeptical of the story. Widely circulated by a publication called Wall Street Underground, it seemed to us to be a concoction based on imagination, not on factual evidence. However, thanks to the persistent efforts of Hugh Sprunt, a Texas tax expert, part-time investigator of political crimes, we now have evidence supporting the rumor that the plane carrying Ron Brown was deliberately guided to crash into the mountain. What he found and discovered in an official airport report on the crash detailed data showing the plane's course based on AWACS airborne radar. The radar showed that when the plane was within 4 minutes of touching down at Dubrovnik, it suddenly changed course radically. It turned to the left, almost 90 degrees. A few seconds later, it made a U-turn back to the right. Then it fixed on a course with a heading of 110 degrees, which followed for over a minute until it crashed into the mountain, 2 miles off course. So we don't really know exactly what happened. It may not have been that elaborate or carefully done. If you've got an explosion on board, just to blow the guy up as he's landing, he just crashed. Speaking of more intrigue and betrayal, we have Mark Milley back in the news again with a new book from Woodward and Robert Costa, their new Trump book. What they're trying to do is, I don't know if it's true or not. I could easily believe it of Trump. I don't trust Trump anymore than I trust Mark Milley. But what Mark Milley did was he reassured the Chinese government that he had taken away essentially the ability for Trump to loose the dogs of war with nuclear weapons. He said, according to the book, he said, General Lee, the Chinese general, I want to assure you that the American government is stable and everything is going to be okay. We are not going to attack or conduct any kinetic operations against you. He went so far as to pledge that he would alert the Chinese general in the event of a U.S. attack. He said, General Lee, you and I have known each other now for 5 years. How well do they know each other? If we're going to attack, I'm going to call you ahead of time. Is that going to be a surprise? Hello. I'm thinking Dr. Strangelove here. Hello, Sergey. Yes, we have a situation here. he said that he felt no absolute certainty that the military could control or trust Trump and believed it was his job as a senior military officer to think the unthinkable and to take any and all necessary precautions. He thought that Trump would provoke a conflict domestically or abroad to distract from his crushing election loss. I guess he's kind of projecting what he would do in a situation like this, right? So Trump came out, says, well, if it's true, it's treason. And he calls him some other choice words in typical Trump style. It came out that Milley took extraordinary action and called for a secret meeting at his Pentagon office January the 8th to review the process for military action, including launching nuclear weapons. CNN reports, speaking to senior military officials in charge of the National Military Command Center, the Pentagon's war room, Milley instructed them not to take orders from anyone unless he was involved. I'm in control here. Remember that? Yeah, it just goes to show you what a banana republic we've become. And I think on both sides. I mean, I'm not. We are a banana republic with nuclear weapons. So we really should be concerned about that on both sides, frankly. And then we have Taliban saying a former Afghan vice president left behind $6 million in cash and gold bars at a residence. They said, they're just throwing away $6 million. It's like it's loose change. Well, it is. It is loose change to the people of the Pentagon, to these corrupt officials as part of the puppet government that we set up there so that we could loot the country of lithium, so we could grow poppies for heroin and the rest of this stuff. It's just amazing, the corruption. And, of course, it had to be left behind. I mean, it makes absolutely good, absolute sense, if you understand. I mean, we already heard that the president showed up at his private plane to bug out. He had so much cash that he couldn't take off the ground, so he had to leave it behind. They don't even talk about how much cash that was. But the fact they've got gold bars at the restaurant, gold bars, that's pretty expensive in terms of weight and trying to get off the ground. So, of course, he'd have to leave. It's just a practical consideration. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Common man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
All right, and I just want to let people know, and thank you for the downloads we've now had. I put up the badge yesterday. I didn't realize it would pass the 1 million mark on just one of our podcast platforms, but we're up to 1.1 million downloads, and that's on Podbean. So thank you for those of you who listen. Appreciate that. And then that has happened on the newly created podcast that we created, I guess, about a month after we started. And we had to do that. We called it the real David Knight Show because we couldn't get access to the David Knight Show, which was on Spreaker. After several months, we got access to that. That was the one that I'd had for years. And so now the you can find it hosted on two different sites. And, of course, both those sites send it out everywhere except for Spotify. Spotify has blocked us, but every other podcast platform has us. So I don't know how many we've got on Spreaker since we began again. But we have 1.1 million downloads this year, and it's trending up. So we appreciate you following us there. We do have a new place where you can hear us. You just heard APS Radio, of course, and you can also find us on aftermath.fm. Spotify carries the show in a video format, and so does Trovo Live. And we also are on Twitter, Periscope. So we're on all those three video platforms. And two audio platforms, but we're also now on a third audio platform, and that is the third audio platform that we're up is TalkStream Live, and you can find us there on TalkStream Live, and we'll have more information about that coming up as well. You can find all the different places. I don't think we've put this in. You just found out about this. I don't think we put that on thedavidknightshow.com yet, but you'll find the links to all the different places where you can pick up the podcast. And that's not just at, you know, Podbean or Spreaker. You can go there and you can directly download it or stream it. You can also get the apps that they have. But then, of course, it also sends it out to things like iTunes and the Google Podcasts and things like that. So you can, if you're set up to use those, you can download it there as well. But we have links to where we have the video archives. Every day we put up the full show. Some of the sites that we put it up, we break it into two or three parts. Others, we put up the full show as one unit. We always put up the topics by time codes. And then we also pull out individual topics and put those on the video sites as well. The video sites we have right now are BitChute and YouTube, Odyssey, and Rumble. And so we have links to everything. And as things change, you'll find those links to change. And finally, we have ways that you can support the show because it is supported by your voluntary contributions. And that's the only way that it's supported right now. So we really do appreciate that. And you'll see the gas gauge there to see how we're doing in a given month. Let's talk a little bit about the new world orders. We have a California county sheriff saying he will not enforce these new world orders. He's called, you know, I will not enforce the vaccine mandate. He didn't call them New World Orders, but that's what they are. The same thing is happening around the world, just at a different speed. And we can look at places like Australia and know where this is headed. And it's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to a listener who contacted me as she was escaping from Australia. I want to talk about firsthand. I cover what's happening in Australia a lot. And there's more news about Australia as well today. They are at the tip of the spear. But we're going to have her on the third hour to talk about that. But in California, at least one sheriff, Riverside County Sheriff's Department, the county sheriff's name is Chad Bianco. He had previously stated that he would not be mandating vaccines for new or current employees. He said, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. He says, I'm anti-vax for Chad. I'm anti-vax for me, but that doesn't mean that I'm anti-vax for somebody else. If you feel like you need it, then do it. If you're in a high-risk category, even if it just makes you feel better, do it. But he said a lot of department heads and different law enforcement agencies are coming up with policies or things like that, and as far as I'm concerned, I will not mandate a vaccine for employees, and we will not make it mandatory for any new employee to be vaccinated or for the current ones. I believe it is a personal choice, and you should make that decision. As he was trolled by some of the media, trying to attack him. He said, over the past couple of weeks, the idea of forced vaccination has caused much concern across the entire country. To repeat the context of the interview that I gave with the podcast, he said, I will not enforce the vaccine mandate on sheriff's department employees. He said, the government has no ability and no authority to mandate your health choices. As your sheriff, I have an obligation to guard your liberty and your freedom. He says, it's time for our government and our politicians to come to the realization that the only reason they exist is because we, the people, formed our government to secure the blessings of individual liberty and freedom, said Chad Bianco. See, even in a place like California, even there, if you've got a good sheriff that you can elect, you can't elect the police chiefs. The police chiefs are appointed by the bureaucrats and some other elected officials in some cases, by the mayor or other people, or it might be by a town manager that is not elected. But they report to those individuals. They don't report, and they're not accountable to you. The sheriff is. And you can get a good sheriff, and they've got one there. On the other hand, you can take a look at London's police chief, Cressida Dick. She used 9/11 to attack companies like Telegram, Signal, WhatsApp, and Apple for using end-to-end encryption. She did it in the context of 9/11. Oh, I watched the towers fall, and I about all this stuff, right? Oh, we've got to have the ability to read everybody's mail because of 9/11 20 years ago. She said 9/11 was a watershed moment, confirming that terrorism was truly a global threat that required a global response. They love these global justifications. Since then, the terrorism landscape has changed and shifted in a number of ways. What began as our response to the rising threat from Islamist terrorists has now changed to the terrorist threat from extreme right-wing groups. Let's just be real clear about this. If you are considered to be the left of Karl Marx and Frederick Engels, you are right-wing. And if you're right-wing, you're obviously an extremist. And if you're an extremist, you're obviously a potential terrorist. That's what she's saying. Have you ever heard these people call left-wing individuals extremists? Have you ever heard them call them left-wing terrorists? That does not exist in the lexicon of the press, or the Associated Press, or any of the rest of them. She said, terrorist groups, whatever their warped ideology or persuasion, he said, we've got to be able to read everybody's mail because of this. The current focus, she said, is on encryption by many big tech companies, and it's serving only to make our job to identify and stop these people even harder, if not impossible. What she has a problem with is privacy. She wants to know everything about you. But here's where we are in terms of, I guess we could call it the tip of the spear. You know, they're moving to set up the vaccines, taking them down to the age of 12. And not just approving it down to the age of 12, but removing parental involvement in this so that they can go directly to the children, so they can pressure them, peer pressure, pressure from above, from teachers, from administrators, pressure that they cannot participate and extracurricular activities, and then say, and these kids down to the age of 12 are mature minors and they understand everything that's going on here. We haven't had full disclosure for adults. Some adults realize that, but you got a lot of adults who don't realize that there hasn't been sufficient disclosure or testing of these vaccines that anyone could have informed consent. There's not enough information. But they nevertheless demand your consent, and they want the consent of children now. You see, this is a global campaign of terror. It's happening right now, simultaneously, in the UK and in Australia. So both these places, the UK is going to approve COVID shots for 12 to 15-year-olds, and then they're going to leave the decision to the children and not to the parents, and the same thing is happening in Australia. Here, by the way, is an Australian news feature done by children, for children.
If you're between 12 and 15, you can now get a Pfizer COVID vaccine. The nation's rollout opened up to more than a million young Aussies today, so kids all around the country have been booking in and rolling up their sleeves. Here's Leela.
It's a big deal. This is the first time a COVID vaccine has been offered to all 12 to 15-year-olds around Australia. And some of you were so keen, you got it straight away.
It's good that it's now open to younger people as well.
Felt fine, barely even hurt, couldn't feel it.
We've been told that having as much of the population vaccinated as possible is the way out of lockdowns and restrictions. So it's no surprise young Aussies seem to be jumping at the opportunity.
All of my friends are just, like, really keen to get vaccinated. Like, they're just, like, jab me. Like, it's totally fine.
I think my best friend is getting vaccinated today, and then some of my other friends are getting vaccinated later on in the week.
Everyone between the ages of 12 to 59 will be able to get it from pharmacies.
It's kind of everyone's duty to do it, I guess, and if I have the chance, I might as well do it, I think, just to protect people.
Yeah, how about that? Does that restore your faith in their judgment? This demographic was eating Tide Pods a year or two ago, and now they're going to be injecting this toxic stuff. They're running that on the Australian Broadcasting Company, ABC. I was also sent a document that came out of the Australian Department of Education and Training, and this is a letter to parents/guardians and carers. It says, as we've written you, your child, we've written your child to provide them with information about eligibility for getting vaccinations. Students will be supported in every way possible to be vaccinated before the end of the school year. So, by the way, we just want to let you know that we're in contact with your children, and we are going to be putting every kind of pressure on them as possible. And you better not get in the way, by the way. This is what this letter is really about. It's not really to inform them. It's really more to threaten them. They said students aged 12 to 15 can book their own appointment and may be able to consent to vaccination themselves if the health professional assumes them to be a mature minor. I should say assesses them. This means that the health professional assesses that they understand the information relevant to this decision to be vaccinated and the effect of that decision. And again, I say there hasn't been enough information allowed out for adults to make that decision. That's why a lot of people have chosen not to make that decision until that information is there. There isn't information that's being allowed to be talked about, but the tests haven't been run long enough for you to even have that information. Again, before a drug is to be approved, it's supposed to be tested for a certain period of time to give time for the side effects to show up. It doesn't matter if you do a massive global rollout of something. It is just a massive global short-term test. It is not a test that looks at the safety of this or the effectiveness of it. None of that matters to these people. They're going to push on ahead. Remember, it was in Tennessee where the state government there fired the state public health director because she was pushing this mature minor nonsense. There's a reason that we don't let mature minors drive cars. There's a reason we don't let mature minors make decisions about alcohol and many other things, including sex. But, of course, they have been pushing these sexual issues on kids in kindergarten through the gender gaslighting. So this is yet another example. That's why I've played the clips many times. I'm not going to play it today. A good example of parental rights and how important and how vital that is. But every country on earth, except for the United States, and I think one other small country, but every other country on earth has signed on to the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child and did it quite some time ago. That was the situation about 15 years ago when I did the videos that I've shown. For the organization that was pushing for a parental rights constitutional amendment to formally recognize that. And we knew exactly where this was going to head, and now here it is. All these different things. Yeah, we've changed your child's gender. We're going to put your child on some chemicals that are going to alter them sexually permanently. We're going to give them operations away, and there's nothing that you're going to say about it. We're going to give them these vaccines, and there's nothing you're going to say about it. Because your children have rights. Your children are going to be making these decisions. And so as that woman who was pushing this mature minor thing in Tennessee was fired, she faked a threat to her after that. Remember that? Oh, look at this. I got a muzzle sent to me. Well, they got the State Bureau of Investigation looking at it, and they found that she had purchased it on Amazon. It was a new account that she'd set up, thinking that it wasn't going to be traceable to her, but she used the same credit card. Not a very difficult case for Sherlock Holmes. I mean, even Watson could solve that one. Anyway, it says, where a student is not considered to be a mature minor by the health professional will seek consent from the student's parent or guardian. So there you go. One way or the other, they're going to inject your kids in Australia. But it's also happening in the UK. In the UK, experts and parents are warning that it may lead to unvaccinated pupils being bullied and could even tear families apart. Of course, that's what it's designed for. It's designed to have these kids bullied. Bullied by peer pressure, bullied by pressure from their teachers, and bullied by pressure that they can't participate in sports and in other all other extracurricular activities. We'll talk about what this looks like in New York. Again, New York, right at the very beginning of all this, almost as far along as the UK and Australia. We'll get to New York in just a second. But here's what this looks like in the UK. The vaccines minister, Zahawi, confirmed, let's just call him the vaccine czar, that's what we'd call him here, plans to offer a single Pfizer jab to healthy 12 to 15-year-olds during a speech at the House of Commons tonight. The final decision whether to have the jab would be down to children and not their parents. Children who are easily intimidated, easily gaslighted. He said, quote, "This will protect young people from catching COVID-19. It will reduce transmission in schools." No, it doesn't. It doesn't. We know that. I mean, this is even admitted by the CDC. The viral load is the same. It makes no difference whatsoever in terms of transmission. None. We have DeSantis winning for school kids mask freedom in a Florida court. Well, that's good. That's really good. You know, the problem is that in New York, they're starting to go down the same path as the UK and Australia. They are going to be blocking all extracurricular activity, and that means not just sports. That means even things like chorus or band. Yeah, I mean, they're stretching this to everything. I imagine, you know, chess club or whatever. You're not going to do anything if you don't get vaccinated in New York. But in Florida, DeSantis is fighting and winning over the mask mandate. And understand, the mask mandate is the principle. It is the precedent. The mask, as I've said from the very beginning of this, I was arguing with Mike Adams. Oh, everybody's got to wear the mask. You don't want to get the vaccine, so wear the mask now. It's like the mask don't work, number one. Number two, it is a placeholder. It is training. It is training for the vaccine mandates. It's creating a climate of fear and paranoia, getting you to obey something that makes absolutely no rational sense so that you will then inject an untested vaccine, which makes absolutely no rational sense. Now, this is what's happening in Florida. And grateful that this is being done in Florida. I got to say, you know, DeSantis has done a lot of really good things. Again, he's not perfect. Every time I compliment him, I get people who criticize me for that. But, let's applaud people when they do the right thing. And they're doing the right thing in many, many different ways. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis' executive order to stop local school districts from mandating masks on school kids has been upheld now by a state appeals court. The Florida First District Court found in favor of the governor on Florida, of Florida on Friday, I should say, found in favor on Friday, September the 10th. The DCA has restored the rights of parents, he said, to make the best decisions for their children. And I will continue to fight for parents' rights. You see, that's the central issue. It's parental rights. It's informed consent. It's individual rights. But in the case of children, it's parental rights because they can't make these decisions. And so parental rights are every bit as important as individual rights. And we're going to talk about, again, we've got Todd Friel, who has Wretched Radio. He has gone back to the well again to tell everybody that they must do everything that the government says, regardless of how corrupt and horrible the government is. And I'm going to tell you, that is not what you are to do as Christians. And I'm going to make the case for that. I'll let him make his case, and then I will tell you what I believe is true. But this all boils down to parental rights. And if you're going to take away parental rights on the masks, you're going to take away parental rights on the vaccines. And if you're going to push these mandates on kids and intimidate them in the schools for masks, you will do the same thing for the vaccine. So he is right to stop this and stop it at this point. They said Jen Psaki radiated pure hostility. This is from MRCTV.org, has this article. It said Jen Psaki radiated pure hostility in a seemingly insatiable desire to invert reality by claiming that DeSantis's move to protect parental choice from school board mandates was somehow anti-freedom. And they write, perhaps Jen has been too busy to understand that when a politician tries to make sure that other politicians and bureaucrats don't apply force to parents and kids, that is not a decrease in freedom. It is an increase in freedom. A relative increase. The Civil Rights Enforcement Arm of the U.S. Department of Education, however, added to the issue on Friday, saying that it is opening an investigation into whether the Florida Education Department, quote, may be preventing school districts in the state from considering or meeting the needs of students with disabilities with a mask mandate ban. So ask yourself, what is it that the Federal Department of Education can do? Remember, the Federal Department of Education did not exist before the middle of the Carter administration. Many of us alive today somehow got an education without there ever being a Federal Department of Education, including myself. As a matter of fact, the original thinkers of who created and founded this country didn't even have any government school system. They did all with homeschooling, self-education, and tutors and other things like that. But no, the Department of Education was something that was created by Carter. Ronald Reagan campaigned to get rid of it. Instead, he nurtured it into adulthood. Charlotte Isaby, who went there thinking she was going to be a part of shutting that thing down, saw it, resigned, saw what was happening, resigned, and wrote the book Deliberately Dumbing Us Down. That's the purpose of the Department of Education, to push a centralized curriculum. We saw this during the George W. Bush administration. No child left behind. And as I always called it, no child left alone. But the Department of Education has been an institution of deconstruction of education. And how do they do this? Are they going to send some marshals down to make sure that the kids are wearing masks in the schools? No, the Department of Education will use money, the threat of taking the money away, and the promise of giving them more money if they do what the Department of Education does. And this is why I've said from the very beginning that what Trump did with the money on that executive order 550 days ago, the money was the most important thing. Yes, by declaring a national state of emergency with an executive order, it also triggered all of the authorization for all of these state laws that had been prepared in the wake of the anthrax false flag and the dark winter simulation 2 months before 9/11. They got a lot of states to enact this. They created model legislation to do precisely what we've seen done for the last year and a half. And when Trump declared the national state of emergency, that triggered legal authority. But more important than that was the amount of money that was put there. So the Department of Education is now going to try to use cash as a carrot and a stick to make sure that they can mandate masks, and then they will eventually mandate vaccines and take away parental consent if the Department of Education succeeds. We don't have too many governors who will stand up to this type of thing. So parents are starting to sue over mask mandates in Colorado. And in Colorado, you have the local county health department, the Tri-County Health Department around Parker, Colorado, is now threatening to fine and to arrest any teachers who don't force masks on the kids. 1 year in jail, a $5,000 fine if you don't enforce my mask mandate. And so as a result, you have parents suing the health department. That issue is whether teachers and administrators can be arrested, charged, prosecuted, fined, not only because they don't wear masks themselves, but because they don't force students to wear the masks. One of the teachers says that teachers, one of the parents said that teachers at her son's school refused to let him inside unless he wore a mask. There were about 30 kids lined up behind him, his friends, our neighbors, people he cares about. You get the picture. This is peer pressure. This is the same type of thing they're doing to pressure these kids into getting the vaccines in Australia, in the UK, in New York. He was humiliated in front of all of them. My son was cowering in the corner in tears, covering his face. Tri-County Health is to blame for what she calls a culture of fear and intimidation. She said this is a public health order, but it's turned teachers into law enforcers, just as they're turning businesses and employers into law enforcers. Anyone and everyone is going to be recruited as a kind of Stasi posse, if you will, informing on other people, pushing other people. I mean, we can see this with flight attendants for the last 20-some-odd years. It becomes a bit of a power trip, doesn't it? So if we follow their orders, we're going to be living in an open-air prison. Whether or not they send you to jail for a year, whether or not they fine you $5,000, they're going to take everything from you, and you're going to be essentially in an open-air prison to do everything that they dictate to you. Yeah, it's going to be medical dictatorship by these bureaucrats. By the way, look at this picture. This was tweeted out by a teachers union. This is a guy going around the classroom. You hear that little buzzing if you're listening to it. He's got a shower cap on. He's got a mask on. And he's got some kind of thing that he's spraying all over the classroom. I have no idea what that guy is spraying. Yeah, it could be rat poison for all I know. It's one of the things I hated about renting an apartment. You rent an apartment, and they just come in at any time they want and spray for bugs. And, you know, you don't know when they've come in to spray for bugs. And it's like, you don't know what they're spraying. You have absolutely no control over it. And I don't know what that guy is spraying there, what health effects, if any, it's going to have for the kids, if it's going to make any difference for the virus. But that was tweeted out by one individual, and I loved his comment. I retweeted it. You'll find it on Libertarian. He tweeted that out, and he said, look, a new ad just dropped for homeschooling. Because if you look at this guy, you look at this insanity and what they're putting in the classroom, if you don't get... If you don't understand what the solution to this insanity is, I don't know what else to tell you. I've told you so many different times. The idea that we're going to convert parents and teachers into enforcers of this order from the health department at the risk of their own liberty, that is not American. We're now threatening people with the strongest powers government has to lock you up, to take away your liberty in order to get you to comply with these public health dictates. That is, folks, where we are. And there's also now college textbooks being put out, and this is one that Campus Reform has found at a North Carolina community college. This community college is, I think it was Piedmont, if I remember. Yeah, Central Piedmont in North Carolina, a community college. This is the kind of stuff that you get if you or your children pay for a tuition of $20,000 to $40,000 a year, I guess, typically. Maybe it's less at a community college. This is what you're going to be fed and what you're going to be expected to regurgitate at the appropriate time. You know, stick your finger down your throat and regurgitate this garbage. Most Americans, this is what it says in the textbook, most Americans responded to the pandemic by limiting their social contact, by covering their faces when going out and washing their hands thoroughly after they did. Or, you know, even doing something like this, you know. Yeah, that's the good people, the responsible people doing stuff like that. And yet lives were lost because Americans held beliefs that were at odds with the facts. Oh, were they? This is a book by Harvard professor Thomas Patterson. The book is called We the People, An Introduction to American Government. Yeah, this is what American government has turned into, a dictatorship, a health dictatorship, where they just goose-step in obedience behind these people, whatever they say. When Campus Reform contacted him, he said, well, you know, some of my beliefs do enter my work, as is with the case with every author. Which is one of the reasons why, folks, when you homeschool your kids, as you should be doing, I have no problem telling people they should be homeschooling their kids. I mean, I almost feel at this point in time it would be abusive for me to say otherwise. But anyway, when you educate your kids, when it comes to something that is historical, you want to get original sources. Don't go with textbooks. The textbooks are nothing but some person from Harvard's opinion. Typically, students at the same college in North Carolina were assigned a quiz that declared CNN to be a more reliable source of news than conservative outlets. And then the vice president of communications at Central Piedmont said, well, textbooks reflect the knowledge and the opinions of the authors, not necessarily the college. And students always are encouraged to question and to discuss their class materials. Well, let's hope that they are at that college. I don't know. But I would just suggest to you again, you'll find that not only are the textbooks biased, but they're significantly dumbed down. If you go back and you get the historical writings, if you want to know about the Civil War, go back and read the people who lived at the time of the Civil War. Right? Read the diary of Mary Chestnut. Read the writings of Frederick Douglass. Read what these people had to say. It'll be challenging because they thought and wrote at a much higher intellectual level than we're accustomed to in this idiocracy. And so from that standpoint alone, it'll be a challenge for your kids. But you'll hear it straight from the horse's mouth instead of having it spun into something completely different. So as we're talking about this again, remember I said that in New York City, they have new rules, new pandemic rules for restaurants. And you've got a reaction to this as well. Over the weekend, we had a protest in New York City. This is what it looked like. It was very well turned out. These are people protesting vaccines, medical mandates. No forced vaccine, medical freedom now. And this goes on for quite some time. This came from Leroy Press, L-E-E-R-O-Y, Leroy Press, for that period. But look at how long that line is. That's a very, very long line. They're doing it peacefully. They're doing it away from any sacred government temples or shrines that we sometimes call Capitol buildings. And that's the key thing. I mean, when we stop and think about this, I have seen that so many times, and it's like, are you kidding me? You know, they entered our sacred place. We heard it again from George W. Bush, all this rhetoric from Pelosi, the sacred place of the Capitol. Yes. Well, you know, they treated it with respect. They didn't even touch the velvet ropes that were there. But these people, this secular religion of humanism, this secular religion of politics, that is like their sacred place, their temple. So stay away from that. Still, you know, go out in the streets and peacefully march. Do march. You know, do say something about it. Don't be silent. But be wise about where you redress your grievances and how you redress them so that you don't give them an opportunity, so that you don't take the bait, as we talked about a great deal yesterday. So the city's new coronavirus vaccine mandate is going to look pretty much like what we've seen happening in Paris. You remember the pictures of the cops coming up, and as people were eating, and it was a sidewalk cafe. So even though it was outside, they were still hitting them up because it was still a place of business. And they had to show their vaccine passports to the gendarmes. Well, the same thing is now happening in New York. On Monday, city inspectors began enforcing the vaccine mandate at restaurants. Diners will be required to show proof of vaccination for indoor dining at all eateries in the city as part of new safety rules from Marxist Bill de Blasio. He said fines will not be imposed for the time being. They're going to ease this in. You know, once you get used to seeing these jackbooted thugs carding people, then they'll do it. And then, of course, you know, they're rolling out, as I mentioned. They're not doing the minor consent thing, but they're doing the minor pressuring thing. All students aged 12 and up will be required to be vaccinated against coronavirus in New York if they want to participate in sports, any extracurricular activities, including all sports, chorus, band, everything else. So you'll be completely excluded from society. This is what they're training you for. Just like for years, they've been training your kids, you know, the current generation, millennials and everything. They went through schools where they had metal detectors, where they had cops all over the place. I mean, nothing like that when I went to school. And I still called it a prison. But it literally became a prison. I had a friend who went to West Point out of high school. And he'd come back and we'd get together. I introduced him to some other friends that I had. And I said, yeah, we were incarcerated together in a state institution for 3 years. That really bugged him. It's like, oh, I'm just talking about high school. You know, we weren't in reform school or prison or anything. But that's the way I regarded it. But now it literally is a prison. They did lockdowns. And now what they're doing is they're training them that you do everything that we say, or we're going to shut off all access to any activities and anything else that you want to do unless you take the jab. So we have Babylon Bee saying, the new iPhone 13, which has just landed, the new iPhone 13 will require vaccination to unlock the screen. Why not? I mean, that is perfect. And I really would not be surprised if that didn't happen pretty soon. You can't, with satire, stay too far ahead of this idiocracy tyranny. We here at Apple are doing our part to keep you safe by keeping our sacred products out of the hands of the filthy unvaccinated, said Tim Cook. Or we could call him Tim Apple, I guess, as Trump did. That's why, starting with the iPhone 13, all Apple users will be required to scan their vaccination card in order to unlock their iPhones. The crowd stood to their feet and cheered at the brilliant idea. I think that's a brilliant idea, said an Apple fan as he walked away from the event. If those stupid, dumb anti-vaxxers don't want to get vaccinated, they can build their own computer company. Also, I hope they die. Tim Cook Apple confirmed that he has software engineers, and he also has some Chinese Uyghur slaves working overtime to ensure that the Vax Verify technology is ready for prime time. We vow to bar the unvaccinated from connecting with the world, said Tim Cook. It's the moral thing to do. Yeah, that really does channel the spirit of the times, doesn't it? I'll just remind you again, as I spent a great deal of time on it, LifeSite News, as I talked about this yesterday, has at the very top now, they have put together a discussion of what you can do to try to get medical or especially religious exemptions. And they're a Catholic site, but they talk about how this works for Protestants, for Jewish people, for a lot of different things. They have a lot of different resources free. They even give you some lawyers who will do this if you want to invest the money into it. But they have it up at the top there. They have it for USA as well as for Canada. And Information Liberation picked up on this as well, talking about LifeSite. It's a great service that's there. And, oh, by the way, I would also mention that Gab has a list of reasons that you can cite to help you to get a religious exemption and a guide for college students. So educate yourself about how to resist this. As Chris Minahan says at Information Liberation, there are at least 100 million of us, and our noncompliance can bring this system to its knees. And folks, this is a system that needs to be brought to its knees. The FDA purchased baby heads and other body parts. Show some new documents. This has been developing slowly over a period of time. First, it came out in the trial of David Dalyden, the Center for Medical Progress. It was Kamala Harris, as the state attorney general in California, who came after David Dalyden because he exposed trafficking in baby body parts, which was really murder for hire. Murder for hire. They came in with what they wanted. And in order to get precisely what they want in a pristine state, they induced a particular type of abortion where about half the babies are born alive. And then they cut them up and send the required, the bounty parts that they're going to pay a lot of money for. They send those fresh, not frozen. And so as he was exposing this with interviews, it was Kamala Harris who came after him to punish him, not to shut the trafficking down. She was elected senator. She was replaced by Javier Becerra as attorney general. He continued the persecution. And now both of them, of course, she's vice president, and he is head of HHS for the Biden administration. But as part of this ongoing trial that's now picked up by a third state attorney general, as part of this persecution of David Dalyden, who exposed this horrific practice, information has now come out about how deeply embedded this is with Fauci, with the NIH, and with the FDA. And with the University of Pittsburgh. And it's not just the documents that have come out with discovery for that particular trial, but now after that started happening, you had Judicial Watch file a Freedom of Information Act. And so more information is coming out. And, you know, when I talk about what Todd Friel with Wretched Radio has to say about suffering and about persecution coming up, I just want to, while we talk about this, understand that if you suffer, you should be suffering for doing good. David Dalyden is suffering, but he's suffering for doing the right thing. He didn't passively sit there and submit to this stuff. He did the right thing. And so Judicial Watch announced this week it's obtained another 198 pages of records from the FDA confirming the purchase plans for fetal heads, human organs, human tissues. And a federal court recently ordered the government to provide more details about the purchase of human body parts, including the line item prices and the price per organ that the government paid. Judicial Watch said the court also found, quote, there is reason to question whether the transactions violate federal law barring the sale of fetal organs. Documents previously uncovered in this lawsuit show that the federal government demanded the purchased fetal organs be fresh, not frozen. Among the details revealed was that there was an agreement in 2012 for $12,000 worth of tissue procurement for humanized mice. Even though the initial award was for $12,000, it ended up costing $60,000. This is not just the Pentagon that has cost overruns. You know, just throws money around like loose change. Even when they are engaged in this kind of Nazi science, this kind of murder of babies to get their parts so they can create transhuman, humanized mice, they pay five times more than they'd originally planned on spending. I mean, just the typical government, except that this is beyond anything we've seen. The kinds of ethics violations, the kind of law violations. Again, this is against the law. Just like it's against the law, it's against international treaties, what Fauci did with gain of function. This is against the law as well. It violates ethical law. It violates international treaties. It violates federal law. And yet, the most highly paid employee in the federal government, Fauci, continues on. Nobody does anything about this. So they can engage in things that were punished at Nuremberg. They can engage in human experimentation. Of course, this whole vaccine rollout is a massive exercise in human experimentation. Removing informed consent, removing the information, and now badgering you without your consent. And this is still an experimental vaccine stage. And the emergency use authorization should not be extended to something that has this low in efficacy, as they've now seen. But they don't care. None of the rules apply. None of the laws apply. No ethics apply here. And it doesn't matter how bad this gets. Nothing ever happens to Fauci and the FDA and the University of Pittsburgh and the rest of these people, Planned Parenthood, for their murders for the human experimentation. They just go on and on. And they get more and more power and more money. So, you know, I look at this trafficking in human baby parts, and it just makes me astounded at the gullibility of the Trump cult that is QAnon was telling these people for the longest time. Oh, President Trump is getting rid of human trafficking. He had Fauci and the FDA trafficking in baby body parts. He didn't do anything about human trafficking. He didn't do anything about murdering babies for their parts. Instead, he danced to the tune of Fauci. Danced to his tune, his handler, Fauci. So according to the some of the information that came out regarding the purchase and delivery of, quote, fetal livers and thymuses, the set price was $580, but then they wound up paying $685. Yeah, because it's the federal government, they always pay more. An intact baby skull was going for $515. Judicial Watch explained that a government researcher once told the company The HM, the humanized mice, are created by surgical implantations of human tissue into the mice that have multiple genetic mutations to block the development of the mouse immune system at a very early stage. The absence of the mouse immune system allows the human tissues to grow and to develop into functional human tissues. In order for the humanization to proceed correctly, we need to obtain fetal tissue with a specific set of specialized characteristics. Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton said, "Chopping up aborted human beings for their organs and tissue is a moral and legal outrage." Last year, the Judicial Watch found some of their papers that the National Institute of Health also paid thousands of dollars to purchase organs, the Center for Medical Progress, because these papers came from the FDA. Thus, the FDA, it's the NIH, the Center for Medical Progress, through another lawsuit, obtained 252 pages of new documents from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Isn't it interesting? It's the usual suspects that gave us this lockdown and great reset. HHS, NIH, FDA. Probably find the CDC is involved in it as well. HHS documents reveal that nearly $3 million in federal funds were spent at the University of Pittsburgh's request, and it was a part of their efforts to become a tissue hub for fetal tissue, ranging from 6 to 42 weeks. 6 to 42 weeks gestation. In that case, Judge William Orrick, who helped to start an abortion business, ordered the Center for Medical Progress not to release more information about its undercover research and the results. You see, the judge that is hearing the case of persecution, first by Kamala Harris, then by Javier Becerra, that judge used to run an abortion business. No conflict of interest there, is there? So with all of that, a top football coach now has been fired, a Navy football coach, Bill Ray Stutzman. Fired on Monday after refusing to take the COVID vaccine, he said, "I stand firm in my conviction. The Naval Academy Athletic Association policy regarding COVID-19 requires all coaches and staff to be vaccinated against this virus based on my religious convictions. And after much thought and prayer, I am unable to follow the requirements of the Naval Academy's COVID policy as it has changed in the last few months. After applying for a religious exemption and attempting to further negotiate alternative working arrangements, I was ultimately relieved of my duties here at Navy." Now just think about this. You know, they want to play games, and they want to say, "Well, I don't think that you've got sincerely held religious beliefs," right? Except he demonstrated how sincerely held his religious beliefs are. He will put his job on the line. He will allow himself to be dismissed, fired, before he will violate his sincerely held religious beliefs. Will they reinstate him now that they've proven that he has those sincerely held religious beliefs? No. Because we are at the stage with our civil government where they don't care about this anymore. The head coach said, "Well, we wish him the best of luck. He and his wife, Chanel, wonderful young man. He's got a bright future in this profession." Does he? Is he going to be able to get a job somewhere else as a football coach? Because everybody's doing this now, right? College, professional, probably high school as well. Got to get the vaccine. I don't think he has a future in that profession. But I think he has a bright future. I think he has the brightest possible future in his profession of Christ. It is a far brighter future than any so-called secular profession. We look at this and we sometimes don't realize how deeply ingrained Christian principles are into the very language that we use. We talk about somebody's vocation. Where'd that come from? Well, vocation, vocal. It's really somebody's calling. What are you called to do? Oz Guinness has a great series about that, the calling, about vocation. You know, we're not all called to be pastors or something else, but we're all called to do different things. And you can glorify God whatever your job is that you're doing, he's glorifying God by getting fired. He says, God is more important to me than this career that I had. He's called to do that. Again, we're not all called to be a pastor or something, but some of us are called to do other things, and it doesn't matter what you're doing. You can do it to glorify God, or you can do it to glorify yourself for selfish reasons. And then I talked yesterday about Allison Williams, who said, I'm not going to do this because my family comes first. We want to have more kids, and we are not going to endanger any of that. Fauci has called for many, many more vaccine mandates. He says the solution to all this is for Americans to rely on trusted public messengers. This is why they're seeking out people who will push the vaccine on you. Trusted public messengers who put aside political ideologies and convince people to get vaccinated, he said. No. Not really putting aside political ideologies. They do have a bipartisan movement of people whose key thing is just to do what Fauci says, to fall in line with the vaccine. And then he says the alternative is to be forced to do this. He said the other way to do it is to have many, many more mandates, said Fauci. So you can either listen to our trusted public propagandist, or we will have many, many more mandates. He said, I know that rankles a lot of people, but you're going to see situations here locally. I don't think you're going to see centrally derived mandates. But there's going to be mandates where colleges, universities, places of business, large corporations are going to say, if you want to come work for us, you got to be vaccinated. 1,000 points, not of light, but of oppression. They're going to use people everywhere. They're going to use people's greed. They're going to use people's greed. You know, we just had the 15th anniversary of my daughter's Gotcha Day, and we adopted. And when we were in the process, we told the lawyer who was handling the papers, she said, well, why'd you get out of that video business? And we said, well, we did it because of convictions. And so she immediately gets back to us and she says, I've got to know what these convictions, the nature of these convictions. Did it involve jail or fines? So, no, that's the only kind of convictions you understand. No. It was different convictions. Different convictions. And so we have to understand that they are going to test us in every way because he said, I don't think people are going to go to work. They're not going to want to skip college or university. So they're going to do what I say. We must stop this. They are coercing us. It is wrong what they are doing in every way. From a medical safety standpoint, from a legal standpoint, from a spiritual ethical standpoint, the way they make these vaccines, it is absolutely wrong. And I was attacked 550 days ago by Daily Beast and Slate and anything for talking about this being a medical dictatorship coming. I said, they're not going to let you do anything. They're going to remove everything from life if you do not get their vaccine. They're going to lock you down until they rush this in. I didn't just come up with that off the top of my head. They've been practicing it since 2001. Dark winter. He said, you'd like to have them do it on a totally voluntary basis. But hey, if that don't work, you got to go to alternatives, right? He's going to make you an offer you can't refuse. The Godfather, Fauci. So no question about it. Many, many more band-aids. He says, I think we're going to turn this around because people are going to want to go to work. They're going to want to go to college. So they're going to do what I tell them to do. That's exactly it. Make you an offer you can't refuse. You're a part of society. Do you want to be a part of the component that propagates the virus, said Fauci? Or the part that propagates the output, or the outbreak? And when I saw that, I thought, was he offering people a job to work for him? He's the one who propagated the virus. He's the one who propagates the outbreak. So are you applying to get an assistant position to Fauci, to be the sorcerer's apprentice, the pharmakia apprentice. You know, we have a Nigerian governor with ties to the World Bank is now requiring proof of vaccination to enter places of worship and banks and every other public gathering. He said, we've made adequate arrangements with security to prevent anybody who does not have a vaccination card from accessing any of these events. It will apply to banking services. It'll apply to weddings. It'll apply to church services, everything. An independent geopolitical analyst and a journalist, Patrick Henningsen, posted the video of the announcement on Twitter, along with his opinion about the new Nigerian directive. He said, they're being leaned on by international powers. Let's call them globalists. It's now verbatim the end times narrative. He said, I think they'll have problems enforcing this, however, in Nigeria. And one Nigerian replied to that and said, thank you for being the first foreigner to report this accurately. And no, it is not enforceable. And if they use strong arm tactics, they will unleash a dragon. Nigerians are stiff-necked people, said the Nigerian Twitter user. Nigeria is one of the least vaccinated countries in the world, with only 1% of the nation's 212 million people being fully vaccinated. Nigeria has 36 states in the country. This particular one is one of only two states that have decided to implement a vaccine passport system. Obeski, who has been the governor of Edo since 2016, has, quote, a robust, sustainable relationship with the World Bank. That's coming from the bankers. They are at the very heart of this great reset. Arizona becomes the first state to sue Biden over vaccine mandates. Attorney General there says the federal government cannot force people to get the COVID vaccine. The Biden administration is once again flouting our laws and precedents to push this radical agenda. There can be no serious or scientific discussion about containing the spread of COVID-19 that does not begin at our southern border. Under our Constitution, the president is not a king who can exercise this sort of unbridled power unilaterally, wrote the Attorney General. Yeah, you know, we could call him a czar. We could call him a Kaiser. We could call him Caesar. That's all the same thing, a king. He is trying to rule as a czar, as a Caesar. And so when we talk about this, we're going to come up and talk a little bit about the ethics, as again, we have trusted messengers out there in the Christian community trying to sell you submission to this system. Never. Never. Yeah, render to Caesar what is due to Caesar. And so we're going to talk what is due to Caesar. Attorney General, and that doesn't mean absolute obedience in all things, no matter how bad, no matter how bad the government is, and no matter how ridiculous it is, that does not mean that you render to Caesar everything. Attorney General Eric Schmidt in Missouri said, we are at a crossroads in America. Who we are and what we're going to be is now being determined, and we must fight back. A judge, meanwhile, has blocked medical workers' vaccine mandates in New York State. Judge David Hurd, I guess we could call this herd immunity, spells that H-U-R-D. That's only temporary, by the way, just like the vaccine, if it even conveys any immunity. A federal judge, David Hurd, has temporarily blocked the state of New York from forcing medical workers to be vaccinated after a group of healthcare workers sued, saying their constitutional rights were violated. The plaintiffs included doctors and nurses, a medical technician, a physician's liaison. They were all facing termination, loss of hospital admitting privileges, the destruction of their careers, unless they consented to be vaccinated with vaccines in contradiction to their religious beliefs. The healthcare employees argued that the vaccine mandate would nullify protections for sincere religious beliefs. I mean, you know, when you have somebody, again, like that football coach who gets fired, or a sports reporter, or these people who file a lawsuit, rather than, do you think that they have sincerely held religious beliefs? They don't care. They don't care. Judge David Hurt said the vaccine mandate is suspended and the New York Department of Health is barred from taking any action, disciplinary or otherwise, against the licensure, certification residency, admitting privileges or other professional status or qualification of any of the plaintiffs on account of their seeking or having obtained a religious exemption from mandatory vaccination. And when the lawyer heard about this, he was contacted by the reporters. This came through as he was being interviewed on the phone. They asked him if he was pleased with the ruling, and he laughed. He said, "Are you kidding me? This is really good news, folks. Let me stress this. This is very, very good news. The state's vaccine mandate puts medical professionals who were praised for their works not so long ago at risk of professional destruction, loss of livelihood, reduction to second-class citizenship because they cannot in conscience, given their sincere religious beliefs, consent to be injected with vaccines that were tested, developed, or produced with cell lines derived from the bodies of aborted babies," quote unquote. That is in the complaint. On August the 26th, the New York State Department of Health put this in. A Department of Health attorney argued that the department is, quote, not constitutionally required to provide a religious exemption. Oh, really? They don't care about the First Amendment. Just said it. She said, you see that with measles. You see that with mumps. We got requirements for healthcare workers. We don't have any exemption for the kids in the school. Why? Going back to 2019, this is what
they
was said.
They have to get the shot. The vaccinations are so important. This is really going around now. They have to get...
That's when we lost religious and medical exemptions. Again, Fauci was lying to you when he said, oh, he's always been around. When I went to school, I had to get this stuff. I don't know where you went to school. Well, I don't know where he went to school. But no, I didn't have to have it. And I'm a lot younger than he is. Measles was no big deal. It really was no big deal. It didn't have much of a risk, and I've got lifetime immunity to it now. But after they started putting it on, they allowed people to have religious and medical exemptions, and they took those things away in 2019, just in time for this game to be played. The plaintiffs also argued that on June the 25th, now remember, this was put on August the 26th. This is when New York State Health Department put out the vaccine mandates for the health workers, right? But on June the 25th, 2 months earlier, the declaration of a state disaster emergency was taken away in New York. The emergency went away. And again, I keep saying this about it being day 550, and I count it that way for the entire world because we are the country that created the vast majority of these vaccines with money, with contracts from President Trump. And we incentivized this financially for hospitals and for governors, and we activated with a national state of emergency the rules and regulations. And that's what they're talking about here in New York. They said on June the 25th, 2 months earlier before they did the vaccine mandate, the disaster emergency connected to that state of New York, they rescinded that emergency declaration. And that, along with all the executive orders that followed it. Therefore, COVID was no longer a public health emergency. And without any emergency orders being issued, Health Commissioner Zucker and Cuomo's successor continued to behave as if the disaster emergency had never ended and as if it will never end, says the complaint. And so they prepare to enforce COVID emergency regulations and vaccine mandates. They continue to go. It will never end. They said, furthermore, the plaintiffs point to the wording on the order which requires health institutions to, quote, continuously require personnel to be fully vaccinated, suggesting that workers must receive many more booster shots as they're ordered to be considered to be fully vaccinated. This is why I said to our friend, you know, struggling with this decision, getting the vaccine, even though he had rheumatoid arthritis, immediately having severe side effects and going to the emergency room, being very sick. He's got myocarditis. And AT&T is saying, well, we got a promotion for you, but we got to know that you're going to get fully vaccinated. You're going to get that second one. And I told him, I said, there's not going to be a second one. They're already talking about doing the booster by 9:20. They're doing a fourth one in Israel now. You've got vaccine cards that are out there that have got 8 slots. There's never going to be any end to this. Never. So they said, look, in this lawsuit, they said, your emergency order ended 2 months before you put out this vaccine mandate. You don't have any authority to start doing emergency orders anymore. The plaintiffs oppose that abortion under any circumstances they believe it is intrinsically evil killing of an innocent, and they also oppose the use of abortion-derived fetal cell lines for medical purposes. They said it would be a violation of deeply held religious beliefs and moral consciences to take any of the available vaccines, given their use of abortion-derived fetal cell lines in testing, development, and in case of several of them, production. By the way, this is a story. You can find the details about this aspect, and I suggest that you look at the story at the New American, because these three things here are things that could help you to write your religious exemption. By receiving one of the COVID vaccines, this is the third aspect, by receiving one of the COVID vaccines currently available, all of which are abortion-connected, they believe they would be cooperating with the evil of abortion in a manner that violates their consciences, that they would sin gravely if they acted against their consciences by taking any of these vaccines. So the lawyer who won on this, at least the temporary injunction, Christopher Ferrara, said, never in the history of New York State, never in the history of the world, has a government sought to forcibly impose mass vaccination on an entire class of people under threat of immediate personal and professional destruction. Destruction is what we're talking about here. This is just another example of how COVID regimes are completely out of control. The federal judiciary has a duty under the Constitution to put a straitjacket on this institutional insanity. And so I want to talk, when we come back, about some of the ethical issues of this. We're going to be joined in the third hour by a refugee from Australia who fled to America for freedom. But it's not clear that we can push these people back. This is why we've got to come together to push this back. This stuff began here, but it is rolling out much more rapidly in other places like Australia. But the same thing that is being done in Australia, UK, Canada, everywhere in the world is going to be done here in America if we don't push back against this. And yet you've got trusted messengers who are being put out there to tell Christians who should be in the thick of this fight not to resist, but to submit. And so we'll talk about that when we come back. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Whether you're feeling like the blues or bluegrass, APS Radio has you covered. Check out a wide variety of channels on our app at APSradio.com.
Fie Iesu Domine.
So are we called to make ourselves suffer? You remember that from Monty Python. the guys walking around in a circle chanting and hitting themselves in the head with a piece of wood. Are we really called to do that? Is that really a virtue? Is that the Christian life? Well, I want you to hear what Todd Friel has to say. And I picked up on him once before. He's done this now. He talked about, well, you have to obey government. He's got the, what I would say before last year was the majority position for most people about Romans 13. Yeah, you just do whatever the government says in all things. Now, if they tell you that you can't go to church, well, then things change by that. But then last year, and I always said, you watch, these people who go down the Romans 13 interpretation, that Romans 13 interpretation, they're not going to go to church when the government tells them they can't go to church, and they didn't. They didn't. Now, some started out and they realized, wait a minute. At first, they thought, well, this is just 2 weeks. We've got to hunker down and we've got to wait and see how dangerous this is. And then gradually they realized that it wasn't the deadly pandemic that they had been told it was going to be. And then as it stretched on and on and on, and then by end of the summer, as more rules came on and they weren't seeing anything happening in their communities, and then the rules turned to, and oh, by the way, we'll let a few of you go to church, but no singing. They kind of realized what was going on, and they started disobeying in mass. And that's why you see the people like James Coates and others, Stevenson in Canada being arrested for doing this. John MacArthur in Los Angeles pushed back against it. They didn't arrest him. He was very well known. I mean, this is a guy who's been on Larry King a lot. He's very well known nationally, internationally. If they would have arrested this 81 years old, I think he is, pastor, that would have been very, very bad optics for them. And so what they did was they started putting fines on them. They put them in escrow. And now, a year later, just before this Newsom recall election, they capitulated to try to help Newsom to get reelected. And they not only allowing them to take these fines out of escrow and keep those fines that they stored up for a year, but also gave them $400,000 from the state, $400,000 from L.A., and other churches have gotten millions of dollars in compensation, about $2 million for a collection of other churches that were fined over this stuff. So some people did fight back against it. But you still have people out there who are telling you that you've got to do whatever the government says in terms of these vaccine mandates, regardless of how unjust it is. And so I saw that because, you know, when I get on to YouTube to listen to some music sometimes, or to find music or news clips about what's happening with COVID, and sometimes I also look up some Christian topics. And so they were suggested to me, and I played for you the clip before where he said, "So my understanding of Romans 13 is if the government tells you that you got to wear propellers on the sides of your head, so you wear propellers on the sides of your head." "Well, no," I said, "you render to Caesar what is due to Caesar. Caesar doesn't have the authority to compel you to do certain things. And the things that we're being compelled to do are not silly. They're unethical. They present a danger to us as well. And they're setting very bad precedent for what is to come. And they have ethical considerations, as I've been talking to you about the connections to aborted babies. The human remains that they're using, as actually murder for hire to develop these things, I mean, that is a major ethical consideration that, of course, Todd Friel does not consider that. Not at all. Neither does Al Mohler. And so this is, that was a very controversial post that he did. And so now he's doubled down on this. I saw this yesterday when I got onto YouTube. Are we really called to submit to unjust rulers? Here's what he had to say.
I might be inclined to say, if I were going to read either 1 Peter 2 or Romans 13, that we're to submit to the government unless the government doesn't behave based on the job description that is given in Romans 13, that you are a terror to evil and a rewarder of good, therefore I don't have to submit. If that hermeneutic applies to that text, wouldn't it apply to wives not submitting to husbands?
Yes, it would.
Slaves not submitting to masters?
Yes, it would.
Children not submitting to parents?
And it should. We'll talk
consider
about
Ephesians
that.
Chapter 6. Children, obey your parents in the Lord. That was the first Bible verse you had your kids memorize. And then it gives the job description to dad. So it's almost a parallel to Romans 13, at least as far as the framework. Submit to the government, obey your parents. And then we get the job description of the government. And the reason I believe it's in Romans 13 is to let you know if you don't obey the government and submit, you're going to get whacked. That's the purpose of the job description. Not to tell us that if they do not adhere to that description for them, we have the right and duty to rebel. I could tell that to kids then. If your parents are making you angry or not training you up in the fear and the admonition of the Lord, you don't have to submit. Wives, if your husband isn't being loving as he is commanded to be in 1 Peter 3, if he's not protecting you, you don't have to obey him. Pastors don't need to be obeyed. If he's not doing his job the way that we think is right, if I'm going to understand Romans 13 in that way, which is one of the reasons I don't.
Okay, so let's talk about that. He says if you were to extend that, then that would mean that, you know, if you got a husband who is abusing his wife, she is not called to submit to him, or the children, if they're being abused by their parents, they're not called to submit to them. And I've used this many times, even before this stuff came up, when I talk about spheres of authority. And when you understand that there are different spheres of authority, we don't have, just as we've got a divided government, you know, they divided, separated powers between different branches of the federal government, they separated power between the federal government and the state government. And then, of course, we as individuals have not only powers but rights. So you have a separated government. We also have a civil sphere of authority. We also have a parental sphere of authority. We have individual sphere of authority. So we got a lot of different spheres. We have a church sphere of authority. Now, those are separate areas. And you don't cross that boundary. You don't take people's kids away if they're not harming the kids. But if they are harming the kids, then if they're sexually or physically abusing those kids in a way, or if the husband is doing that to the wife, then it is appropriate for one of these other authorities to penetrate that sphere and to do something about that. Why? Because there are ethical standards about justice and the way you treat people. And those transcend those things. In the same way that if you've got a country that invades other countries, then at that point you come in, all the other countries get together, and they take away that government. They take away that authority. They decapitate that government, essentially, which is what we did, you know, with Germany, with Japan in World War II. And so, yes, there is a case for that. And I've got to say that this misunderstanding of when those boundaries need to be penetrated is one of the things that has enabled a lot of Christian groups to enable child abuse and spouse abuse and a lot of other things that have happened that we've seen. Or abuse by pastors or priests of children. So we have different spheres of authority, and that is the key thing. But I don't want to get into a lot of theological debates, and I also don't want to attack a fellow Christian, but I want to correct this error. There's much that I agree with Todd Friel about. He is somebody who is a Christian. He trusts Christ, and he has some very good things to say about how to bear up under suffering and what our hope is. But let me tell you, even though we are going to face suffering in this life, especially all Christians, we will be facing suffering. Are we supposed to seek it out? And the other aspect of this is that, and I think this is a trait of the feminization of the church, that we don't see the flip side of submission, and that is the duty to defend and protect that those who are to be submitted to have. And that's part of their legitimate authority. And when you say, well, those descriptions of legitimate government in Romans 13 are not descriptive. They are proscriptive of your actions, but they're not describing a government that is one that is legitimate. That's how we get into that situation. So I just got to say, you know, my job here is I talk about current events. I don't try to cover news topics simply to titillate people. I'm trying to cover the news that is going to be impacting our lives, our liberty. Why? Because I don't want to be a slave, and I don't want my children or my grandchildren to be slaves. And so when I talk about my Christian beliefs, I'm not hesitant to talk about my Christian beliefs. I'm not trying to push them on you. My understanding is that I can't. I simply tell you what it is. God will open your heart or not. But I will tell you why I do these things, because that's the foundation of what I believe about politics, about society, about everything. That's what my life is built on. And so I will talk about that, and I'll talk about that in the context of current events and liberty. And I just have to say, you know, when it comes to submission, you're not going to rob my home without first tying me up, as Jesus said. You know, you're not going to rob a strong man without first tying him up in his house. But I have to say, you're also not going to cripple my children or kill my children or cripple or kill me without first of having a fight. So I am to obey authority, but I also have a responsibility to protect those that God has given to me. I also have a responsibility to protect innocent life around me. And I've talked many times about Charles Van Wyk, the guy who was a missionary in South Africa. And he struggled with whether or not he should carry a gun to protect himself when they were having all the Marxist revolutions there. And he happened to be in a church. He was able to save 1,000 people's lives because he had gotten a pistol. And I won't go into the details of that again. But he, by taking a couple of effective shots and the way that it happened, God kind of magnified that situation. These guys thought they were being attacked from multiple angles, and they ran away. They had come in there with machine guns, and they threw grenades in. They immediately killed over 50 people. But their plans were to kill everybody in that church of 1,000 people. And they picked that church because it was a prosperous church in a very liberal neighborhood, and they figured nobody would be carrying weapons. And this guy just happened to be visiting them that day. So we got a couple of questions here. Number one, are we called to submit to an unjust government? That's really the topic here. Number one, who is legitimate authority? He doesn't ask that question, really. Secondly, what are we responsible for? Not just to whom do we submit. Third, is rebellion to tyrants our right? Is it our duty? Number four, does love compel us to defend and not just to submit? Number five, while suffering is a refinement, we will all suffer. Do we seek to make it happen? Are we making masochism a commandment? And number six, are we called to worship the beast? Are we called to inject this poison created by some of the most evil actions the world has ever known? Are we called to blindly obey and inject that poison product into our bodies in order to buy, to sell, to work, to travel, everything else? So let me say, first of all, to the question of whether a just or unjust government is to be obeyed, it is also a question of authority. I was just telling you about, I actually haven't gotten to the DeSantis article yet, but DeSantis has put on a fine. It will total up to millions of dollars for some of these jurisdictions, because if you have a local government that is going to mandate vaccines, he is going to fine them $5,000 for each and every one of these mandates, each and every person they mandate that for. So in just one small county, where Gainesville, Florida is, they totaled up to $37 million. Other bigger counties are going to have much higher bills if they push forward with this. So in that situation, you have one governmental authority. So who is the authority here? You've got DeSantis saying, if you do that, I'm going to fine you. And then you have Biden saying, if you don't do that, I'm going to fine you. So you're fined if you do, you're fined if you don't. It's not a situation that's fine, is it? You've got, either way you go, either the president or the governor is going to impose a fine on you. So who do you obey? Who do you obey? You're going to have to think about this, aren't you? You can't just blindly say, well, I'm supposed to submit to authority. Which authority? We have divided authority under our Constitution. And not only that, but you have something else that is involved here, and that is the Constitution, which is higher than both the government, governor and the president. And that is really what you are called to obey. So who is the authority? Legally, the Constitution is the authority. Morally, God is the authority. God defines right from wrong. God hates unequal scales. He hates unequal justice. He hates bribes. He hates murder. He hates exploitation. He hates theft. And you know what? He hates it even when it's done by government. And I would say this, he especially hates it when it is done by government. That is clear. I'm not going to go through and read you a bunch of passages. Read the Bible yourself. You can see that God hates bribes, injustice, murder, and the greed that is motivating most of this stuff. The love of money that is the root of all of these evils. God hates that, especially when it's being done by the most powerful, by the government. And you know, this even reflects itself in our understanding of civil law, because we always say that it is better to let an innocent man go than to allow the government to become criminal in its prosecution of people, right? Why? Because now you've got the most powerful criminal running amongst you, and that would be a criminal government. So we have to have limitations on what the government does. That's why we have due process. That's why we have protection against excessive fines, because the government is not to be allowed to run roughshod over us. But let me just say this. We're not to sit supinely by while men in power, who, by the way, have no authority, murder babies, traffic in body parts, create chimeric transhumanist animals to test their genetic modifying concoctions, then demand that we inject that stuff into our bodies, disregard the death, the paralysis, the crippling, and other suffering of these people. Why? So that they can make obscene profits to feed their greed? And then expel us from society, bar us from buying and selling and traveling if we don't inject that genetic concoction? Soylent genes, if you will. Anything else that they desire in the future to be injected into our body. Let me tell you, that is an indication of a government that is criminal, that has no authority. And I will not obey a government like that. There are legal issues there. There are spiritual issues there. There are ethical issues there that are being completely ignored by the people who say, you do everything the government says. Because. Because why? Because it's going to whack you? Yes, there may be some consequences to pushing back against this. You might be thrown into a lion's den. You might be thrown into a fiery furnace. And government, and not government, God may not rescue you. But like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you say, well, either way, I'm not going to obey you. I'm going to obey God. I'm going to obey my conscience. Too many Christians talk about only one side of this, and that is the submission side. We ignore that as parents we have a responsibility for our children. And who are we responsible to? God. I'm responsible for those that are underneath me, and I'm responsible to God. You notice how he didn't do it from that direction. He says, well, you know, these people have to submit to them. And, you know, the parents, the children have to submit to the parents, and the wife has to submit to the husband, and then the husband has to submit to the government or to the pastor or whatever. He never talks about the other side of this, the responsibility. So you have a responsibility to protect and to provide. You're responsible to do that for them, and you're responsible to God for doing that. And we have different spheres of authority. Even in the First Peter passage that he's talking about, it says, submit to God, resist evil, resist evil. So is rebellion to tyrants our right? Is it our duty? You know, Francis Schaeffer had a lot to say about this. Francis Schaeffer was writing, you know, he died in the 80s, I think, but in 1981, he had a great deal to say about this, and he had a Christian manifesto and a lot of other things. And the issue of his time was abortion. And, of course, that is still there within these vaccine mandates, the issue of abortion. He said, first of all, we have to understand that tyranny is satanic. And not to resist it is to resist God. And to resist tyranny is to honor God. Second, since the ruler is granted power conditionally, it follows that the people have the power to withdraw their sanction if the proper conditions are not fulfilled. So one of the things that's missed with all these discussions is they'll always say, well, in the Roman Empire, blah, blah, blah. Well, we don't live in the Roman Empire. Maybe I should explain that again to Todd. We do not live in the Roman Empire. We do not live under a Caesar. We do not live under a king. Biden does not have a kingly right to sniff whoever he wishes, as the Babylon Bee said in a satire piece. We don't have a system of a king. Our king is the Constitution. We have a system of laws and principles. He swears to uphold those laws and principles as a condition of his office. It is conditional. His power is conditional. So people have the power to withdraw their sanction if the proper conditions are not met, said Francis Schaeffer. The civil magistrate is a fiduciary figure. That is, he holds his authority in trust for the people. The violation of the trust gives the people a legitimate base for resistance. Citizens have a moral obligation to resist unjust, tyrannical government. While we must always be subject to the office of the magistrate, we are not to be subject to the man always in that office when his commands are contrary to the Bible, contrary to the Constitution, contrary to ethics. A ruler should not be deposed merely because he commits a single breach of the compact that he has with people. But when culture has lost its way, we should now have somebody new to direct it, right? Who should direct it? Well, some people say that it's the academic, especially the scientific elite, plus the state. To those who know Plato, it all sounds very familiar. The philosopher kings are to be reinstated. Philosopher kings, the scientific elite. You know, somebody like, oh, I don't know, Fauci. If we have an academic, scientific state elite, without any controls upon them, this is what we have now. I mean, he was writing this 40 years ago. If we have an academic, scientific state elite without any controls upon them, without any outside universal to guide them, it will undoubtedly lead in the direction of an establishment totalitarianism. The danger is that the evangelicals, being so committed to middle-class norms, often even elevating these norms to an equal place with God's absolutes, will slide without thought into accepting this establishment elite that will bring an establishment totalitarianism. He says, if there is no place for civil disobedience, then government has been made autonomous, and as such it has been put in the place of the living God. Because then you are to obey it, even when it tells you in its own way at that time to worship Caesar. And at that point is exactly where the early Christians performed their acts of civil disobedience, even when it cost them their lives. I've said many times, if you look at the plans of the globalist elite, they have the three omni characteristics of God. They seek to have omniscience about everything about you and your life, even to the extent that they can predict what you're going to do. So they have omniscience. They seek to have all power, omnipotence. And they seek to be omnipresent everywhere and everything. Everything in our lives now is going to be dictated or mandated or prohibited or prescribed by these people. So everywhere in your life, knowing everything about you, and having all power to dictate. These people see themselves as God. They seek to become God. And if we allow them to operate without any external controls on them by us, because we're the ones who have to enforce the Constitution against them, if we allow them to operate autonomously like that, that's another aspect of God. And we are engaged in idolatry, folks. Only when the magistrate acts in such a way that the governing structure of the country is being destroyed, that is, when he is attacking the fundamental structure of society, is he to be relieved of his power and authority. In such an instance, for the private person, the individual must defend himself by protest, by many other things that are available to us. But, you know, Francis Schaeffer had this to say. I want to finish this up before we go to our guest here. He said, all we ask for is what the founding fathers of this country stood and fought and died for. And at the same time, very crucial in all of this, standing absolutely for a high view of human life against a snowballing low view of human life. This thing has been presented under the hypocritical name of choice. How cynical that is now, isn't it? For 40 years, we heard, oh, I'm pro-choice, I'm pro-choice, I'm pro-choice. And I always said, the only choice they support is your choice to kill your child. They didn't even like it if your choice is to not kill your child. And now we've seen that in spades. These same people who label themselves as pro-choice to kill another human being that is half the time a different sex from the mother, many times a different blood type, but always a different DNA. It is a different person. It is not your body. But now when it is your body, they don't support your choice. They demand that you inject into your body, without having a choice, the products of their murders, the products of their Nazi science, the products of their unlimited greed. What does choice equal? He said, choice, as I've always shown, means the right to kill for your own selfish desires, to kill human life. That's the choice that they've been presenting. That's the choice that was presented in the 1980s. He said, when the government negates the law of God, it abrogates its authority. That's right. That's a different opinion than what Todd Friel is selling and what a lot, unfortunately, of Christians are selling. God has given certain offices to restrain chaos in this fallen world, but it does not mean that these offices are autonomous. And when a government commands that which is contrary to the law of God, it abrogates its authority. Throughout the whole history of the Christian church, he says, I stress that what we have seen, Peter said to the when he was hauled before the court, he said, should I obey man rather than God? He says, often people will say to me, but the early church didn't practice civil disobedience. He says, didn't they? You don't know your history. He said, when those Christians that we all talk about so much allowed themselves to be thrown into the arena, when they did that, from their viewpoint, it was a religious thing. From their viewpoint, they did not want to engage in emperor worship. But from the viewpoint of the people who executed them, it was civil disobedience. They really didn't care about one religion or the other. They just wanted to make sure that you were going to follow into that. And, you know, even when we go to the into Christian history, much later, we see that it was many of the aspects of where you had Catholics killing Protestants and Protestants killing Catholics, and both the Catholics and the Protestants killing the Anabaptists. A lot of that fighting was because you had a unification of church and state. And one of the reasons why both groups came after the Anabaptists was because they had a believer baptism. It wasn't something that was done at the initiation. The initiation of life when a child was an infant, both the Protestants and the Catholics would baptize the kids. And because the church, whatever church it was, Catholic or Protestant, because it was united with the state, they saw you as changing your allegiance if you got rebaptized or if you changed from Protestant to Catholic. You were changing your political allegiance, not just your religious beliefs. And so again, it was that same dynamic. For some people, it was a religious thing, but for the governments, it was a civil disobedience that had to be punished by death. So he says, you got to recognize that from the state, the Roman state, there was nothing religious about it. It was purely civil. The Roman Empire had disintegrated until the only unity that it had was the worship of Caesar. You could do anything that you wanted to, but if you did not obey Caesar, that was the ultimate disunity. It was a civil matter. When those Christians stood up there and refused to worship Caesar, from the standpoint of the state, they were rebels. They were in civil disobedience. They were thrown to the beast. They were involved in civil disobedience as much as your brothers and sisters in the Soviet Union are. Again, he wrote this in 1980. When the Soviet Union says that by law they cannot tell their children, even in their home, about Jesus Christ, they must disobey. And then they get sent off to the mental ward or to Siberia. It's exactly the same kind of civil disobedience that's represented in a very real way by the thing that I'm wearing on my lapel tonight, he said as he gave the speech. The founding fathers of this country faced and acted in the realization that if there is no place for disobeying the government, that government has been put in the place of the living God. In such a case, the government has been made a false god. If there is no place for disobeying a human government, what government there is has been made God. So Caesar, under a different name, thinking of the early church, has been put upon the final throne. The Bible's answer is no. Caesar is not to be put in the place of God. And we as Christians, in the name of the Lordship of Christ, in all of life, we have to think and act on the appropriate level. It should always be on the appropriate level. There we have a lot of room to move. We can move with court cases. We can move with the people that we elect. We can engage in civil disobedience, and we can understand that they do not bear the sword in vain, that there will be punishment for this. We will lose jobs. We will lose positions. We may lose our freedom. We may lose our life. But Christ must be the final Lord, not Caesar, not society, not the Marxist mob. And so, when they're demanding, when the state, this want-to-be Caesar, is demanding that you inject these toxic substances, the product of greed and murder, into your body, you are to say no. Now, you may wind up suffering, but we don't seek to suffer. If we seek to suffer, we want to wear hair shirts and beat ourselves with boards. That is a kind of pride, and it is a kind of self-centeredness. When Peter was talking to them, he was giving them a hope. And he said, even when you suffer, and you will suffer, even when you die, and you will die, these are the words and the understanding that should comfort you. He is not calling us to seek it out. It will seek us out. When we pray, do not deliver us into temptation or into testing, but deliver us from evil. We don't seek these things, but we have comfort when we face them. That's a very different thing. A very different thing. So I think Todd has completely missed this, but I'll finish up and let him say just briefly here as we bring on our guest. He has some good words of comfort.
Though now for a little while, if need be, you have been grieved by various trials, that the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ. I wonder, myself included, how many of us have forgotten what this hokey-pokey called life is all about as a Christian? I've been paid for. I've been purchased. I've been redeemed. I have a seat set for me at a table that he is preparing to serve me a banquet at. This is what has been given to me. This is what I'm about. Now, you're going through trials. Remember that.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
If you like the Eagles,
on a dark desert highway,
the Cars, and Huey Lewis in the News,
they say the hotter rock and roll is still beating.
You'll love the Classic Hits channel at APS Radio. Download our app or listen now at APSradio.com.
All right, and joining us now is an escapee from Australia, Jody. Jody has been a listener for quite a while, and we have corresponded back and forth on Twitter. And Jody has just finally escaped from Australia, so we want to find out what is going on in Australia. Thank you for joining us, Jody.
Thanks so much, David. It's a real honor to be on your program. I'm a massive fan of the David Knight Show. You've been an outstanding broadcaster. You've been a beacon, actually, amidst all the nonsense that's coming out of the mainstream media. And your show is just absolutely brilliant, David. And a lot of people, it's on at about 11 o'clock at night in Australia, but a lot of people listen to your show. And they've been big fans of yours since, you know, the days of Alex Jones. And then I followed you across to your platform that you've actually built up. And you've done it in a true American spirit. You've just started from scratch, and it's an outstanding show. And we love your work down under, and it's inspiring, David. But before I go into my story, I'd just like to give a shout out to Tony Arterburn. Burners, I know you're listening. It's great to say good day to you. And I'd also like to say hello to a couple of friends in Australia, a lady by the name of Gail, who's in Victoria. She's doing it tough at the moment with regards to the lockdowns, and a guy called Ed as well too. He's a real bulldog when it comes to fighting against the oppression that's going down in Australia. So I just like to get that out of the way, David, sure, before I start talking about what's going on. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was talking earlier today about the plans to roll out digital cash and to limit how much we can buy based on whatever arbitrary criteria they want to come up with. They got a carbon footprint, so they'll total up what your carbon footprint is, and then they'll cut you off. And so, folks, we're going to have a parallel society in a lot of different ways. And one of the key ways that's going to be is going to be with gold, but especially silver. Tony sent me a silver coin. I want to thank him. Wisewolf.gold, 1 ounce silver coin. It was really, really cool. I meant to bring it here so I could show it on air. But it's got kind of a Statue of Liberty artwork on one side, and it's got an eagle on the other side. And it's exactly 1 ounce of silver. We're going to need to have something that is exchangeable like that when we go into what is coming up, if we're not able to head these people off. Because what they are planning from the banking system is to crash our currency, to push us into a central bank digital currency, and to control and track everything that we're able to do financially. So that's very, very important. People can prepare for that. And I tell you, Tony is a great guy. How do you know Tony, Jody?
I actually gave him a bit of negative feedback when he was hosting your show. I accused him of having a monotone voice, and
and then I've been accused of that too. So
yeah, when he said he was a paratrooper, I felt about this big. So I actually wrote a very apologetic email, and we've actually became really good mates. And I love Tony. He's a classic American. I mean, living in the Ozarks, off the grid. I mean, he's a classic American, and yeah, he calls his dogs his hounds. I mean, it's a complete package, David.
That's right. Well, let's talk about Australia, because talked about this so many times, and I remember when I first started seeing the massive rollout of the police state and the military against the people. I'd never seen anything like that in a Western civilization that had been free. And I played, the soundtrack from On the Beach, Waltzing Matilda. And I said, in that movie was very depressing. It was about a nuclear war where the entire world was dying, and the last place that was left was Australia. And so the submarine crew there, Gregory Peck and these guys, go down there. And it was just depressing because everybody was dying. And I said, but it's gone the other way around. It's like Australia has fallen first, and now this metastasizing, stifling cancer of this medical tyranny, unlike nuclear war, this medical tyranny is insinuating itself into every country in the world. But it started in Australia instead of Australia being the last place. So tell us what it's been like in Australia for the last 18 months.
Sure, David. It's interesting that you use a film as an analogy, because it's coming to a theater near you, is what I'd like to say, building on those comments that what they're rolling out in Australia, I'm damn sure they're going to try and roll out in America and around the world as well too. It's really frightening. It's dystopian. As we speak, I was living in Sydney, and I'd been there for about 15 months. I'd been in the United States last year. I was in Las Vegas for 4 months, and was put into 14 days quarantine. So if I went back to Australia now, I'd be put into 14 days quarantine. You'd be greeted by the police and you'd be locked up in quarantine. So any overseas traveller that goes back to Australia, if you can get back, you're quarantined. So that's not much fun. You know, you're locked up in a hotel room for 14 days. You know, you have armed police officers letting you outside for 7 minutes of fresh air. It's like being a prisoner. But on an everyday basis, the residents of New South Wales cannot travel more than 3 miles or 5 kilometres from their house or place of residence. If they've got a job outside that zone, they've got to produce papers to the police to show that they've got, you know, a valid or legal reason to travel, which I tell Americans over here that, and their jaws drop. They hit the floor when they hear that. They're absolutely shocked by that. And so people feel like they're prisoners, David, in their own homes. And the only places they can really go to are the local supermarkets. And, you know, the only life that they can experience is basically virtual life or, you know, watching Netflix or television or listening to music. There's nothing much you can do. You can't visit friends. You can't visit your family that are outside those zones. You can't go to a church or synagogue or mosque, which I find appalling. You know, because religious worship, you were talking about religion just before, David, it's such an integral part of our lives, and that's been stolen from us as well, too. So it's like a communist state at the moment, David.
Yeah, and I've seen, I remember there was a surveillance camera on the outside of one individual. He goes out in his pajamas to take his trash to the curb. And immediately, two cops come wheeling up and want his ID. It's like, are you beyond your 5 kilometer distance here, your 3 miles distance? He goes, I live here. I'm in my pajamas. I'm taking the trash out. And I mean, they're just swooping down on everybody. I saw the pictures of a massive army of cops, some of them mounted, but they grabbing a guy and holding his arms behind him while another cop sticks a mask on him. I saw them tackling women. I mean, they're getting violent with people there. What is the situation? There's also a QR code. That's also there in Sydney, isn't it, under Gladys? Sure.
That's right, Gladys Berejiklian. I know your fellow colleague Gerald Salente calls her Gladys Bean Jerking, and I think that's a bit risque, but I think that's a very apt title for her. She's an absolute tyrant, Gladys Berejiklian.
Yeah.
She's allegedly a conservative, She's part of the Liberal Party is a conservative party in Australia, and she's been an absolute tyrant. I mean, she. Initially, in these early stages of this thing, she was seen as a moderate and actually letting people live their lives. But ever since July, when she's imposed this lockdown, she's just turned into an absolute tyrant. And
I didn't hear too much about her. Last year, it was all about Dan Andrews and what was happening in Victoria and Melbourne. But now she has taken the limelight with her dictatorial orders, hasn't she?
She's an absolute dictator, David, absolutely. But with the QR codes, as you just mentioned, that's one of the basic differences that you notice here in the United States. Like, I've been to Safeway and Walmart. I don't have to QR scan myself when I go into the supermarket. I don't have a security guard saying, well, if you haven't got your phone with you, you have to sign in, you know, with a pen and paper. So I've never seen that happen here in the United States. But in Sydney, that's what you've got to do. Not just supermarkets, though, David. You've got to sign into every place that you go into. So you're being tracked, you know, 24/7. And it's frightening, David. It's dystopian, and it's what it's doing to people is it's breaking their spirit. Like, I'm reading so many messages on Twitter that, you know, that people are saying, oh, look, bugger, I'm going to have the jab, you know, just so I can just get on with life. And you know, this is awful coercion, David.
Yeah, they're just wearing people down, and that's the whole point of this, is just to continue to wear people down. When you were contacting me and saying that you were going to try to get into America, you know, we were praying that you would make it in. You had a green card that you had already, but of course now they're making people, if they want to get a green card, they're making a condition in the U.S. to get vaccinated. What is the situation with vaccination coercion that is happening there in Australia? What are they doing?
Okay, David. Yeah, I mean, and that was another reason why I decided to pull the pin and decide to, you know, come over to the United States. I was actually quite fortunate. I got my green card in the diversity visa lottery program, and the program that Donald Trump wanted to get rid of. And, you know, I used to be all in with Trump, by the way, too, David. I was a big fan, but not after Warp Speed and not after he let Fauci step up and take over the narrative. But, you know, he was, you know, accusing diversity visa lottery winners of, you know, exploiting the system. Well, like, you can't get more patriotic than me. I mean, I've got my flag behind me that's been flown over the USS Arizona. I've got a deep love of this country. So I really value my green card. And I also, you know, I want to put something back into this country, you know, given the opportunity. And so to get to America, I had to first apply for an exemption. And I was given that by the Australian government because I'm deemed as a resident of another country. So that's why I was given an exemption, because no Australian can leave Australia at the moment. You have to have very special grounds to leave, whether it's a family member dying or, you know, business reasons or whatever. So also, you don't have to get vaccinated at this stage. You have to provide, though, a PCR test that's been conducted 72 hours prior to your departure. So you've got to go through all this process just to get on a plane. It's very controlled. It's very rigid. And it's just, you feel like you're in China, David. It's just, it's so regimented and communist and fascist-like. It's awful.
Yeah. And they, some time ago, at the very beginning of this, they limited interstate travel within Australia between different Australian states. I remember some lady, as they started to gradually release that, she was in her 60s, she was on a pension, and she flew from one Australian state to another because she thought it was okay. She knew that she had to quarantine for 14 days, but she said, my house was within like 3 miles of the airport, but she said she was the only one on the plane. When she landed and got off, she was met by this army of cops, and they whisked her off to a hotel where she had to pay for her daily per diem under quarantine, and she wound up having to pay like $2,000. They wouldn't let her go to her house to stay there. That type of thing that we're now hearing in the United States, again, because this is a plan, the only difference from one country to the other, just like we're seeing a difference here in the United States, the only difference is what people are willing to put up with, and you know, the speed at which they boil the frogs. And so the Republican governors who are betraying us know that they can't impose certain things on us yet. It's got to be a little bit more gradual. The Democrats are going full on, and other states are going in full on, like Australia. But we're now seeing the Biden administration talking about how they're going to impose vaccine mandates on people if they want to fly within the United States, not just you know, from abroad. So this is a pattern that has been coming on for quite some time. You were talking about how difficult it is to get out of Australia or even to get into Australia. The reports I've seen show that basically it's virtually impossible. They got a very small lottery, don't they? And then, but unless you're a celebrity like Nicole Kidman or some global elitist, then they just make an exception to the rules because, you know, the rules only apply to the hoi polloi like
well,
us. Right?
Well, I've got a little bit of a story, David. I mean, I bumped into Borat. I mean, he's an absolute grinning idiot, that bloke. I mean, he's an absolute fool. But I went to my local supermarket and I saw this big tall bloke and I thought, hang on a minute, here, is this Borat, isn't it? And I remember he actually pulled a stunt on the Tucson Republican Club. He went in there, and I've actually been to the Tucson Republican Club, and they're actually decent people. They're decent Americans. They're welcoming of all sorts of people. And he went in there and actually, you know, stood up on their podium and made fun of them. And I actually said, look, I know a few Republicans. And he goes, oh, really? And he said, well, what do you know them for? And he actually tried to shame me because I knew some conservatives. And, you know, he's an arrogant SOB. And, you know, he's walking around Australia happy as Larry. You know, he can travel the world because he's a celebrity. And I really can't stand that bloke. He's an absolute moron. And but that's an example, David, of the freedoms that they have. But everyday, you know, citizens that want to travel to Australia, they can't do that, David. So the elites do cruise around the world at their will.
That's right. Yeah, we don't have equal protection of the law. We have a two-tiered system, and it's going to get even more tiered with these other mandates that are coming on. Talk a little bit about your perception of America, because, again, you know, it's colored by you living under this kind of totalitarian society. I said, welcome. We need more people like you who have experienced this, who know where this is headed. I love to see people coming. You know, I grew up in Florida where there were a lot of Cuban refugees. Their parents knew exactly what they were escaping from, and they were hardcore supporters of freedom. We see the same thing about people who lived under the Soviet Union and the satellite states that were there. And so as somebody who's living under the new tyranny, talk about your perspective of coming here to America, because we're feeling like we're in jail here. I'm not feeling free at all. I feel like, well, I've had this imposed, but it's all relative, and you've been under the worst of it.
Sure, David. Look, compared to Australia, this place is an absolute paradise. I'm serious. You've got some very basic, you know, fundamental freedoms that I think you should really embrace. Just the simple act of going to a supermarket and not having to QR scan in. I mean, that itself is a great blessing. But also just to get into your car and travel around, you know, drive as far as you want, you can do that. So that just basics like that are just something that I absolutely, you know, embrace. And, you know, they're working on that.
They're going to try to.
Yeah, I know, David.
They're going to make sure that you got a limited range and they're going to try to make the cars expensive so you can't afford them. So, yeah, they're working on that's the one loophole that they really can't do anything about right now. And so, you know, they can shut us down completely from taking planes and trains. But in terms of automobiles, they're still working on that. What else? I saw you got a gun when you got here too, didn't you?
Yeah, I've had a gun actually. I've got a Kimber 7mm. I love my little gun. It's great. It's, you know, it's I never want to use it. It's a, you know, it's the ultimate last resort. You know,
that's that, right.
And I've been trained on how to use it, and the instructor, the first thing he said off the bat was, you'd never want to use this. It's only an ultimate last resort. So, but I mean, it's a very key last resort, especially with the tyranny that I've witnessed in Australia, and I can see why the founding fathers incorporated the Second Amendment into the Constitution. And, you know, it's a very important piece of legislation or law that's written in the Constitution. And I think that's a really important tenet.
Well, I've mentioned many times that, you know, we don't want to see a war happen. But you know, any rational government doesn't want to see that happen either. And the place of the Second Amendment is to make sure that we have, just as for years we had a kind of an easy Cold War between the Soviet Union and the U.S., a policy of mutually assured destruction with nuclear weapons. So it's like, don't push that button. Don't start that war, because we're all going to die if we do that. And that's the situation with the Second Amendment. I used to have reporters when I was with the Libertarian Party and I was running for office, they'd say, do you really think that the second, same stuff that we're hearing from Joe Biden, do you really think the Second Amendment's going to protect you against this military that is the most powerful military in the world, and yada, yada? And I said, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, go back and look at the history of the Warsaw Uprising and so forth. I said, it is a deterrent. And you don't want to have asymmetric warfare like we've seen in Iraq and Afghanistan. But our government and any occupying government has never won a war like that. But we don't want to have that, because it's going to wind up with tens of millions of people, if not more, dead on both sides. We don't want to have a situation like that. But it is there as a deterrent. And it is a deterrent. It is an implied threat that is there that I think is a restraining force. And that's why the founders had it there primarily, was as a restraining force.
Sure. I think, you know, it's so important, David. And, you know, it really does, you know, there's so many people in America that obviously, you know, possess a firearm. And you know, it's so important that you've got that safety valve, you know, for governments that, I mean, imagine if the Jewish people in Germany were armed, they certainly would have, it would have been a different outcome in the Second World War. So it's, you know, it's there. But I think in my correspondence with you, David, I'm very positive about America. You know, your country's seen, it's gone through great turmoil. You've had your civil war, you've had World War One and World War Two, you've had the civil rights, but you've also seen positives, you know, regardless of Barack Obama's politics. I mean, he was the first African-American to be elected into the, you know, the highest office in the United States. So there's a lot of positives about your country, you know, and I mean, it's always gone through very difficult times. And it's all, you know, it always prevails though in the end, regardless of the, I mean, lots of people do get affected and, you know, people do lose their lives through the turmoil. But in the end, you know, the United States prevails. And I have a lot of faith, and that's why I came, and I want to be part of this story that, you know, that's ongoing. And yes, there will be pain and there will be trouble, but I just think it's the best place to be in the world because of the, you know, the foundation that the founding fathers laid down. And, you know, it's always going to be a struggle, David. Freedom, you know, the price of liberty is eternal vigilance, as Jefferson once wrote. And, you know, and I'm very aware of those things, David. And that's what gives me confidence. And you know, I have a lot of faith in the future.
Well, you know, it has to be. That's why I spent so much time talking about what I did in the last hour, because it has to be something that we value. We have to have a vision of what legitimate government is. We have to have a valuing of liberty that would unite us across these political lines, and that's why they don't want us talking about liberty, why they're shutting this down. But the key thing is that people have to wake up and understand what is happening. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to get you on to talk about this worst case scenario that we see rolling out first in Australia, but it's coming in many different places in many different ways. I have people contacting me from all over the world, people from Vietnam, people from a lot of Caribbean nations, Eastern European nations are contacting me. It is a common plan that is happening around the world, only happening at a different speed. And it doesn't seem to make any difference what political party these people are a part of. They could be liberal. They could be conservative. It doesn't matter.
There's no difference. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
No. They're all on the same script, and we're all headed to the same place. The only difference is a little bit of different speed. So we've got to wake people up. Finally, we're starting to see people wake up, and I'm hoping that they're going to start to take action. That's why I'm trying to get people to prepare for themselves personally, trying to get people to organize locally, because as you pointed out in Australia, the key thing that they want to do is make sure that everybody is isolated from each other, that nobody has any correspondence to anyone except through their internet portals. And of course, we've seen many reports in Australia of people who were organizing protests all of a sudden get a knock on the door and a SWAT team arrests the individuals who were planning that on Facebook or wherever, whatever internet portal they had there.
Yes, yes, David. Just going on governance, you know, the one thing that stood out, you know, that really troubles me around the world is this expert class. I'm a big fan of Sir Robert Menzies. He was the father of the Liberal Party in Australia, and he always was very sceptical of the expert class. And what I mean by the expert class is these medical experts like Dr. Fauci. And in Australia, you've got a woman by the name of Kerry Chant, who I know Halloween's coming up. She should be haunting houses. I mean, she's an absolute, you know, a freak of a woman. And you know, what she's, some of the things that she's spitting out, you've probably seen some of her quotes about, you know, not having a conversation with people if you're in the supermarket because, you know, that could be dangerous. And, you know, she's talking about, you know, ongoing vaccinations. And, you know, it's all according to the health advice. And they never actually reveal the health advice. They use that phrase to basically dodge questions.
That's right. Yeah. If we say that it's health, that's it. Did we lose her? She dropped? Ah. Okay. Well, she's absolutely right. And let me just clarify, when she talks about liberal, we understand, we talk about classical liberalism. Up until about the time of World War I, people who supported individual liberty and who supported in both what we call now civil liberty as well as economic liberty, those people were called liberals because they supported liberty, right? A liberal college education was to free your mind to be able to think critically and to have the tools of learning so that you could pursue it. But now, you know, in our country, liberal is identified with people who are socialists, who are Marxists, and that type of thing. So when she's talking about liberal, and that's why I was surprised to hear that Gladys Berejiklian identified as a liberal, which is essentially as a libertarian, we would call it here. Somebody who said that they were, you got her? Got her back? Okay, good. We got, we had a drop off there, Jody, so we got her back now. Sorry, Jody, we lost contact. You were saying, go ahead.
I think Carrie Chant's watching David and she, you know, she pulled the lever.
Oh, they got a lot of levers, don't they? They got them everywhere.
100%. Yeah. But I mean, back to that medical expert class. I mean, I call them quacks. You know, there's a lot of quacks. You know, these, you know, viral experts and doc. I mean, they're absolute quacks and they're just drunk on power, David. I think that's the thing that, you know, makes them step up and they really enjoy the limelight and they feel so self-important and they don't have any empathy. They don't, you know, understand what it's like to work a, you know, a lousy, you know, 9-to-5 day job or, you know, because they're on, you know, government subsidies and, you know, university scholarships. And so they can just sit back in their, you know, their comfort of their own, you know, empires and, you know, dictate these ridiculous, you know, medical, you know, in inverted commas, medical terms like, you know, standing 6 feet apart, social distancing, wearing masks, having vaccines. They're just, I call them quacks, David. And well, it's this expert class that are really destroying society.
And we've seen the expert class ally themselves with globalist agenda when it comes to things like climate change, for example. I've been involved with a group that said, show us your data. You've published your paper. We've used that to craft public policy. Show us your data. No, I'm not going to show you my data. And so we've seen this type of thing before. Trust me because I've got a PhD. Trust me because I come from, or I teach at an elite university. So we're just experts. But they use the experts to essentially hide the data and to shut down any kind of scientific debate. Science is always about debate. It is always about skepticism. And when you purge that, you're not doing science, you're not doing medicine, you're simply doing tyranny. And that's where we are right now. We have a medical dictatorship. This is the thing that we have to burst this bubble. And I think for a lot of people in this country, perhaps, I'm hoping that Biden moved too far, too fast. But we'll just have to see what happens with this vaccine mandate. Was there anything else that you wanted to say about America or your experience?
I've met Joe Biden. He didn't sniff me, by the way, David.
That is his kingly right, though.
I've met Obama and I've met Jimmy Carter because I covered the presidential campaign of 2008. I went to Iowa and, you know, did all the primary stuff. And that was actually really fascinating to see, you know, that whole sort of system, you know, roll out. And it gave you a chance to actually walk up and say good day to the candidate. So I've got a reasonable understanding of your political system. And it's like show business, I guess, because, you know, you don't have compulsory voting. So you've got to work really hard to get people motivated to vote. So, you know, that's a fascinating aspect of American life. Whereas in Australia, you have to vote. But
really,
I mean, yeah, well, you get fined if you don't vote. And the thing is, though, like you were saying, though, it doesn't matter Labor or Liberal in Australia at the moment. They're all the same. But look, I'd like to actually talk about a woman that I believe she's got her fingerprints all over this, you know, rollout with regards to the COVID restrictions. And her name is Jane Holton. And I know a lot of people in Australia know about this lady. She's a senior public servant in the Australian government, and she's got her fingers in a lot of pies. And, you know, you mentioned people that have got, you know, banking credentials and the like. Well, Jane Holton is, she's exhibit A with regards to what's going on in Australia. She's a senior advisor to the Australian Prime Minister, Scott Morrison. She was involved in Event 201, which was sponsored by the world, you know, the team Schwab and mm-hmm. Bill Gates and the John Hopkins outfit. She's also on the board of many influential organisations in Australia, such as Crown Casino, which is a premium gambling company in Australia. She's also part of the ANZ Bank. And when she actually was a participant in Event 201, on her card, she had, you know, ANZ Bank. So, I mean, what the hell's a banker talking about, you know, a pretend pandemic? You know, that was mm-hmm. what Event 201 was about, discussing, mm-hmm. you know, ways to combat it. So what the hell's a banker doing talking about a medical situation? And, you know, this woman is a really nasty piece of work, David, and she's in the ear of the Prime Minister. She's also a psychologist as well, too. I mean, this woman's got so many things that, you know, are quite alarming. And the power and the reach that she has in Australian life and global life is quite troubling, David. And if your listeners want to Google her, Jane Holton, and just have a look at her and look at her form, I think some of you people will be quite surprised at the influence and power that this woman has. And she's behind the scenes as well too, David. She doesn't, you know, she hardly attends press conferences. And when she does, she's questioned by media that's complicit and doesn't ask her the hard questions. And, you know, if you want to know what's going on in Australia, I'd look very closely at this woman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the bankers, the psychologists, as I've said, you know, a year ago, they turned everybody in America OCD pretty much. Everybody was obsessive, compulsive, you know, scrubbing everything down and putting masks on their faces. But a lot of that is a psychological manipulation. And it is also about behavioral modification. This is going right down the script of B.F. Skinner with positive and negative operant conditioning and gradually rolling this out, nudging us, as Cass Sunstein used to say in the past. But especially that event 201 and all the other 20 events that were part of that. That's why I say I knew where this was headed from the very beginning, even before it started, because they've been rehearsing for this very thing since 2 months before 9/11 and then, you know, rolling all this stuff out. So it is a very long standing. It's not, you know, it's not a theory. This is a conspiracy that's been practiced over and over again for 20 years globally with people from all different countries.
Sure. David, you know, the thing is that, you know, when you say, when you provide a counter argument against all this, this COVID-19 restriction rubbish, you know, people say, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist and the like. No, I counter that argument by saying I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm actually, I believe what these people are rolling out is bad public health policy. That's mm-hmm. what it is. It's bad policy mm-hmm. because, you know, locks operate, you know, lockstep, Agenda 21, what the WHO and other organisations want to roll out to us is, I mean, they've put their policy documents out in the public. You can access them. And I believe they're very bad public policy documents that have been embraced by government departments all around the world. And yep. that's the problem, David, is that, you know, the bureaucracies have embraced these, you know, really tyrannical policies, and they need to be, you know, thrown in and put into the garbage can, basically. And, you know, so I don't, it's not a conspiracy, David, it's just bad public policy.
You know? Oh, yeah. Very, very bad public policy. And, of course, the end game, we also know, they've talked about this for the longest time. They even gave it a specific date around 2015 of 2030. They understand all of these different issues. This policy that you're talking about, they have practiced it on an annual basis with the people who are going to be implementing it. They rehearsed how they were going to manipulate public opinion. They would have their little press, daily press briefings about how the public supposedly reacted to this or that. So they run through their simulations on an annual basis, practicing this, practicing how they were going to manipulate people. It is very, very well rehearsed. The only thing is that there are so many of us, if we can recover our moral and political foundations, and if we can get people to understand where this is headed, there's so many more of us that even with their well-rehearsed plans, we can stop them if we stand together collectively for individual yeah. liberty, if we understand what is happening. Even sure. if there's just 100 million of us, we can shut this economy down. And that's one of the things. People need to prepare for what is coming, because even if we don't have a general strike to shut this thing down, if they purge people in key areas, we're going to wind up having massive disruptions to all kinds of supplies. And that's going to affect our food supply and many other things. And that is, I think, part of their plan. This is not, that would not be an unintended consequence. That is exactly what they intend to do. And so we can either let that kind of flow through and happen to us, or we can proactively take the lead on it and saying, we're shutting it down. You're not shutting it down. We're going to shut it down. And this is why, and you better back off.
Sure. Yeah, it's basically a two-tiered society. That's what they're trying to implement, yes. David. I mean, and Gladys Berejiklian's been quite brazen about that. She's saying if you're not double vaxxed, you won't be allowed to go to clubs, bars, and restaurants. So it's basically Jim Crow 2.0.
Yeah.
And, you know, as an Australian, I'm appalled at that, because we're an egalitarian society, and, you know, that, you know, we embrace all cultures. And I know you guys in America do too. It's abhorrent. And it's quite remarkable, because, you know, the past 20 to 30 years we've been, you know, deluged with the word diversity and equality. And yet here we have this system that's rolling out a two-tiered system. And it's a real, you know, I'm just, you know, gobsmacked, you know, that these people, these so-called enlightened people, are actually embracing a two-tiered society. And it's appalling, David. And,
yeah.
you know, and whenever I hear the word equality or diversity, I start running very quickly, because, you know, there's no such thing. You know, and I really...
For decades, you know, going back to the 50s, the 60s, talking about Jim Crow, we had established the idea that a company is not going to be allowed to kick people out because of their skin color. They're not going to tell you you're going to sit at the end of the lunch counter, or you're not even going to get in the restaurant. But that's what they're embracing now. And shutting down every access that we have to everything. So all of these arguments that corporations can do whatever they wish to people arbitrarily, they can take away our free speech, they can take away our access to public areas, that has never been embraced by us. It should never be embraced by us. Government's purpose is to make sure that they keep public spaces open to us without discrimination of any sort. And so that's really the mm-hmm. thing that we need to come back and fight. And I've been fighting this battle on the speech side now for several years. And because mm-hmm. we did not understand that principle that big corporations are not allowed to do whatever they wish, we're now in the situation where we are right now. And they're extending mm-hmm. that power. Well, it's great mm-hmm. talking to you, Jody. And I'm so glad that you made it to the United States.
Thanks,
and it's good to have somebody here who appreciates and understands freedom, because it was taken away from you. And we just have to hope that we can all stand together and keep that from being taken away from everybody here and the rest of the world. If we could, perhaps we can roll this back here. We can start to roll that ball of liberty around the planet again, just as we did in 1776. It was a shot that was heard around the world. Now we've got the shots that have been sent around the world, but maybe we can start to undo that. Thank you so much for joining us, Jody, and welcome to America.
Thank you so much, David. It's been an absolute honor to speak with you today, and I just wish you all the best with your family and your show. It's outstanding. Keep up the great work, David. Keep punching, as they say, and thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jody. All right, we're going to be right back, folks. I'm going to talk a little bit about toxic medicine. Do you realize that they found some more contaminated vaccines in Japan? These are coming from Pfizer. And the nice thing about it is that it's a different color contaminant. So you got a choice. You can have either black contaminants or white contaminants. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project, to make sure the commoners own nothing, and the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.
If you like the Eagles,
on a dark desert highway,
the Cars, and Huey Lewis in the News,
they say the hotter rock and roll is the beating.
You'll love the Classic Hits channel at APS Radio. Download our app or listen now at APSradio.com.
All right, I want to get into a couple of clips that I really wanted to play for you today. What is going on in Florida, as well as something from Fauci that I think really highlights the blood money aspect of this. But first, in Japan, and of course they pulled back. First, it was 1 million doses of Moderna because they found some black metallic substances, they said, that reacted with magnets. That's what they said. And then they found another 1.6 million. So they pulled 2.6 million doses of Moderna off because of contaminants that were floating in it. They had it was either 3 or 4 people who died shortly after being injected there. And now we have Pfizer, the same thing happening. They have, however, this is something different. This is white-colored floating substances in vials of Pfizer. And I guess we could start spelling that instead of V-I-A-L. We could spell that V-I-L-E. This is vile stuff in many different regards. And you understand, this is one of the reasons why Pfizer was strong-arming different governments like Argentina and Brazil and another Latin American country. And then we found out later that they did it with 2 other countries who spoke up. So 5 different countries were strong-armed by these people, saying, we want legal immunity not only from the design, the untested design that we have here, but we also want legal immunity for any kind of manufacturing defects. You know, like if you were to find, like, floating white-colored substances in the vaccine, we need to be held harmless for that. And that ought to be all you really need to know to reject this vaccine. And that's one of the reasons why they are forcing it on people. But this is white contaminants first reported in the Kanagawa Prefecture. On Tuesday, 2 more cities, neighboring in Osaka, reported contaminated vials. However, there were no reports of adverse reactions. In other words, if there were adverse reactions, it will not be reported. That's another way to phrase this. Moderna came under fire after black contaminants were found in multiple vials, V-I-L-E, of their COVID-19 vaccine in Japan. So you've got a choice. Isn't that nice? You can get your black contaminants or your white contaminants. And also, it also comes in pink. They said, according to NHK, black substances were found in syringes in a vial, while pink substances were spotted in a different syringe. Yes. So the question is, what are we going to do with this, and what is the ultimate goal? Well, we have Fauci talking about the fact that he is hoping that we can now get a combined flu and COVID shot. Moderna is working on a combination COVID-19 vaccine booster and flu shot. And again, this is, I said, this is not our first rodeo. I've watched Fauci and the CDC and the FDA push on an annual basis these flu shots. They use the same statistical games. They use the same fear-mongering and all the rest of it that they've used this last year. They wanted everybody to get an annual flu shot in the worst way. But the advertising campaigns are not just working. So now we have a coercion. And now they're going to be putting the two of these things together. This is nothing other than unmitigated greed. But I want to play for you Fauci going back about 15 years ago. Actually, no, not quite that long. This is December the 11th, 2009. Fauci was outlining the potential profit model for big pharma companies regarding vaccines. And he talked about how influenza vaccines would become routine for everyone before we transition to a universal vaccine. Here's what he had to say.
The best way to get the stability to the system where the companies have a degree of confidence that things are not going to roller coaster on them is to just get more and more people vaccinated each year. If you look at the history of vaccinations for influenza over the last several years, with the increase and the expansion of the recommendations from the CDC, we've gone from 20, 30, 40, 50 million up to now over 100 million. You know, as a public health person, I would think that the goal that I would see to really stabilize the system and therefore make it less of a crisis issue when you get to have a pandemic flu, which we know will again occur as was predicted, even though they're rare events, they do occur, is to get as many people vaccinated as possible. And what we foresee in the future is that influenza vaccine will be something that is essentially a routine vaccination for everyone. And if we then transition that into the universal vaccine, then you may only have to do that every couple of years and get people protected not only from seasonal flu, but from pandemic flu. In my mind, that's the end game. And that's good for the companies, too, because they're going to know and predict that every year the vast majority of the American population is going to get vaccinated, not having to guess will they or will they not this year or next year.
Show me the money! Jerry, you better yell!
Yeah,
show
it's good for the company. Money! They get to know every year they're going to gin up vaccines for every single person in the country. Yeah, show me the money. That's what. And right there, as he's talking about that, in 2009, that was before they realized just how bad the vaccine that he and Moncef Slaoui, who was the vaccine czar that we had for Operation Warp Speed, Moncef Slaoui, who had spent his entire career in vaccines, developing vaccines at GlaxoSmithKline, and then going to Moderna, then going to the White House. After he left, cashed in his chips, he went back to the pharmaceutical companies. And he was working on the next big thing, electroceuticals, using electrical charges to manipulate people's bodies. He was working on that until he got booted out for sexual assault charges. But he and Fauci had been working on Pandemrix, and that was the rushed vaccine that they put out in response to the swine flu 2008. And so there he is, flush with the success of that. They only, though, made about $2 billion, and they were very upset because they only got a vaccination rate of about 25%. However, prior to this, it was the best documented case of vaccine injuries because you started having children within one year, typically would not happen that quickly. Within 1 year, they started getting narcolepsy, catalepsy, and other things that have been life-altering. Many of them now in their mid-20s are committing suicide because it is so debilitating. But they rolled that thing out, And now you have people who are saying, well, yeah, this looks like myocarditis and it looks like a heart attack from a vaccine, but you understand this has been 6 months. I mean, we've got people who are dropping dead immediately after getting vaccinated and they still don't want to look at it. That's how bad this cover-up run because they're able to censor things from people. That's how bad this has become. And so it is about the money. And it's, you know, it'd be good for the companies too, he said. It'd be real good for the companies. I'm going to get you guys some money here. Going to get you an annual annuity here. And it's even better than that. They're going to be rolling these things out every couple of months. As a matter of fact, Scott Gottlieb, remember him? He was one of the FDA guys for Trump. Well, he's now gone on to be on the Pfizer board, just like his successor at the FDA under Trump has now gone on to Moderna. One of them goes to Pfizer. The other one goes to Moderna. Imagine that. The one who went to Moderna is now on the board of the venture capital firm that gave the money to them. But Scott Gottlieb, the guy who's now at Pfizer, says that vaccines could be approved for kids 5 to 11 by the end of October. He goes on to say, it could be like Halloween. Yeah, that's what it seems like to me. It seems like Halloween. In a best-case scenario, he says, given the timeline they've just laid out, you could potentially have a vaccine available to children aged 5 to 11 by Halloween. Kind of sounds like Snow White and the Wicked the Wicked Witch, right? Holding out that apple to the kids. Here, little kid, you want to take the vaccine? Because you, I'm considering you as a 5-year-old, you are a mature minor. I mean, you're mature enough to decide what gender you are, regardless of your physiological sex. So you can make the decision to take this toxic poison that the witch has here. Tom Massey, congressman from Kentucky, highlighted how the CDC has changed the very definition of the vaccines yet again. This is now, as I count it, the fourth revision, I think, of a definition of a vaccine. You know, first they took away the idea of natural immunity, and then they brought that back, but then they started specifically, and they expanded it from just like a one-line statement to something that takes about a page and a half, because they put in all these examples about how mRNA are vaccines and so forth, which are never considered to be mRNA, or never considered to be vaccines. And so now what they have done is they've changed it yet again. As I've talked about this in the past, vaccination is changed from a shot that produces immunity to a specific disease to a shot that produces protection. They've given up on the idea of immunity as they continue to push forward as if this is the life-saving elixir that everybody must have because, you know, it's going to protect you. Not going to give you immunity, but it's going to protect you. And it's not going, and it's going to stop the transmission of the disease, even though the vaccinated people have the same viral load or greater than the unvaccinated. A Sydney doctor who criticized medical censorship online is suspended from practicing medicine. Again, Sydney, that's New South Wales, where Gladys Berejiklian is, as Jody was saying. Two anonymous complaints because this guy had this to say on social media. He said the risk of antibody-dependent enhancement, that's such a well-known phenomenon in the vaccination technology. They have an initial for it, an acronym, ADE. He said, antibody-dependent enhancement of disease driven by immune escape from the selective evolutionary pressure of vaccinating with a non-sterilizing agent is a real and present danger needs to be discussed. In other words, if it doesn't kill it, what does not kill the virus makes it stronger. And that's what he's talking about. So the result was they called him in for questioning before a panel, and then they suspended his license the next day. This is where we are at the moment. I've talked about my friend back in North Carolina who got sick, several friends who got sick, took different medications, took different treatments. One went the typical AMA route, and actually the father of a friend of my son's, he unfortunately died. But my friend just contacted me yesterday and said, I wanted to clarify what you had to say about the ivermectin. He said, I don't want people to think that it happened immediately. He said, it was about 15 minutes before I got this really warm feeling in my chest and all the congestion lifted. It happened very rapidly. That's still 15 minutes. It still happens very rapidly. But again, he said, you know, we treat, but it is God who heals. But then he said that some other friends of his, a family of seven, they were all of them in a limousine. And he said, they're all sick to one degree or the other. But the one who is very, very sick, because they, you know, they're older, many of them, and they have other issues. They have issues with diabetes. Some of them have some issues with obesity and other things like that. But the youngest son, who is 20 years old, is the one who is the sickest. He's in the best health and the best shape of anybody in the family. He had no comorbidities at all. But as they're all in this limo for a special occasion, and they all get sick immediately after that, the only one who is very, very, very sick is a 20-year-old vaccinated son. By the way, if you want to pray for him, his name is Tim. His name is Tim. Well, that's it for today's broadcast. We'll have more about freedom, lockdown, and how we resist this tomorrow. Stay with us. We'll be back in about 21 hours. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.